All right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran will have your morning drive at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and it's Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
That's one artist, three songs. You program the bumps. You request them. We play them a little bit later on. 312-981-7200. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Dan Feinberg is going to join us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every other week to talk about TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. F-I-E-N. Also, New Kids on the Block and a bunch of other nostalgic groups are getting together for a tour. I wanted to talk about who you would like to see come back. Like, what old bands or artists would you like to see return to the road? And have you been to some of these sort of reunion or nostalgia tours before? And you got stories about that. I've been to a couple. And would love to hear from you guys on that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got some pizza talk that we're going to get into later on today, this morning. So stick around. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you can subscribe to our podcasts. Every single second of every show is podcast. And you can subscribe, go to iTunes, go to the places where you get your podcasts. Subscribe, it's free. Lots of people listen to our podcast, and we really appreciate that because we have a lot of listeners who enjoy our podcast and subscribe. So subscribe, it's free, and we'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's happening this morning, this Thursday morning, and let's say hello to my great producer, Dan Chigrou. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Excited for the Hawks. They took a little long time off. I wasn't thrilled.
Yeah, the beginning of the season is always funky.
It's weird, man.
And then we're gonna have a stretch mid to three quarters way in where they're gonna play like six games.
Yeah.
8 days.
Yeah, yeah. They're back tonight, and they play the Wild in Minnesota. You can hear the puck drop right here at 7 o'clock on WGN. I'm looking forward to seeing how they do tonight, considering that their first three games were a lot of fun to watch. And it's starting off to be a pretty exciting season, so I'm looking forward to some hockey for tonight. And Dan, you good? You all set?
I'm good, yes.
All right. Triple Play Thursday will begin. We'll get that a little bit later on. 312-981-7200. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well.
Good. Good.
Nick, considering, we're almost through the week now. So
Yeah. It's been a fun week. It's going to be chilly. It's going to be chilly.
I left the apartment, and I was like, ooh. I went back and got my coat.
I have the hoodie sweatshirt, which I think will not be enough walking to the car, Dan, after the show, considering it's going to drop to like the 40s
right today.
It's funny. It's always funny this time of year too, because in a couple of months we're going to welcome the 40s.
I know.
We're going to be like, it's going to be warm up to 40 in a couple of days.
Exactly. So, but I'm going to have to bust out the pea coat. For this weekend, I think. So, all right, cool. Well, anyway, that's what's happening on the show. Dan and Vic are here, and I am here, and Dan Feinberg is going to be here right after we take a break coming up. And we got lots more happening here. Once again, 312-981-7200. That's your phone number for talk or text and Triple Play Thursday requests. And think about this these reunion tours that we're talking about and who you would like to see or maybe who you have seen. I've seen a couple. I love it when they just show up at like a street fest. You know, when a lot of the older bands just show up, and there's only like one member from the real band that's in there. So anyway, Kids in the Hall. Kids in the Hall are reuniting. Actually, they did. They did. Actually, Kids in the Hall did tour. It's a completely different experience than New Kids on the Block, though. If you went to see Kids in the Hall thinking it was New Kids on the Block, you were probably like, what do they mean I'm crushing your head? I don't understand what's happening right now. So, anyway. All right. Think about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's take a break. Dan Feinberg will be with us right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in now, and that's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about What acts would you like to see have a reunion and go on tour? And also, if you've gone on any of these nostalgia tours or seen some of the acts that used to be popular, how do they still hold up? We'll get into some of that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 right here on WGN. All right, right now, it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we talk TV every couple of weeks, and there's always a lot of TV to talk about. So let's welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Nick?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So lots of TV, as always, to talk about.
So much TV. Yes. So much TV.
All right. Well, let's start with something that I'm really, really curious about, and I've watched the trailers for it. I want to talk about the Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. Let's talk a little bit about that. Tell us about that.
Excellent. I'm glad that we get to start with something that's actually decent, and then we can talk about the ongoing nightmare that is the broadcast premiere.
Yeah,
slate,
and
so.
I watched a few. I watched a few of the premieres, Dan. We'll have some stuff to talk about for sure. So,
So the Haunting of Hill House is, of course, based on the classic Shirley Jackson novel of the same name, which is one of the most seminal sort of haunted house texts out there, and has been an influence on pretty much everything in the genre subsequently.
And it's one of my favorite books of all time. So,
and it's based, let's say, loosely. Like, don't go in expecting really all that close at all. It's more inspired by or in the vicinity of, however you want to put it. Anyway, it is adapted for television by Mike Flanagan, who has been slowly building up a reputation as a horror auteur, and he did the very solid Netflix adaptation of Gerald's Game, which gets credit for basically finding any way whatsoever to adapt one of Stephen King's most unadaptable books. Yeah. And so it's a story about a family that moves into an old house in western Massachusetts, and they begin to do renovations, as you do, and turns out that the house has dark secrets, and 20 years into the future, in the present day, the siblings are still dealing with the things that they experienced in the house, and one of the siblings is being drawn back to the house by unseen forces, and wouldn't you know it, soon they'll all be going back for a final reckoning in Hill House. And, sorry, I somehow got carried away with the ominous trailer voice.
Right.
And it's not the kind of show that television does all that frequently. It's not like there aren't horror shows on television. We could just go back to Twin Peaks last summer, which really at its heart was very often a horror show.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the scariest, freakiest shows ever on television.
Yep,
but
all I got to say is episode 8. That's all I got to say.
which is as disturbing as a TV show gets. But this is a haunted house movie elongated over 10 hours. Mike Flanagan directed all 10 hours. And the thing that is most impressive about it is that it really does not wear out its welcome. It starts out creepy. It has jump scares. And, if you know the genre, I don't know that anyone is entirely anti-jump scare, but I know that many aficionados of the genre feel like they get overused in today's horror movies. And this is something that pops up a bunch throughout the series, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. There's general kind of creepy, crawly gore type scares. There's kind of primal stuff like, bugs and that sort of stuff. It's just effectively creepy for much longer than you would think it would be. Mm. Each of the 10 episodes, and I've seen the entire first season, features at least two sort of jump or jolt type moments. And it's got a surprisingly, well, not surprising, because, people like being in horror movies, it's got a very good cast. And so the cast includes Carla Gugino, who can do very little wrong.
Yep.
as the matriarch of the family. Henry Thomas plays her husband in the flashback scenes, and then Timothy Hutton plays the role in later scenes. And on one hand, that's spectacular casting because they look an awful lot alike, and you can understand that. On the other hand, the age difference between them is really much smaller than the show seems to think it is, and I got confused several times by why Timothy Hutton was playing an old version of Henry Thomas, but
and the
rest of the cast is just very, very solid as well. People will recognize Michael Huseman from Game of Thrones and Treme. He's very good. People will recognize Elizabeth Reeser from a lot of things. There's a cast of just kids, basically, who are all tremendous and who do exactly everything you would want from a horror movie child. They're empathetic. They're emotional. They get you caught up and instantly into the world, because we all wish to protect little children in these movies and shows. So yeah, it's really very effective. To me, it ran out of energy a little bit in the home stretch, but there's a lot going on here, and I was impressed by how well it held up.
That's great. That's great news. And is it streaming now, or is it this weekend?
It is streaming starting on Friday.
Okay,
and,
good.
I think people are really going to dig this show. Netflix sort of last year gave everyone their Halloween streaming option with Stranger Things,
right,
and that was great. And then they subsequently turned around and they didn't have a season of Stranger Things this year. I think that as horror programming goes, this is much more purely scary, creepy, crawly. It's not as fun or as funny, or certainly not as nostalgic.
Right.
But I think for Halloween fear and frights, it'll do well by audiences.
That's fantastic. That's my favorite genre, by the way. So this is also my favorite time of year. So I'm really looking forward to it. And so my weekend plans are pretty much set, because I'm going to see First Man, Bad Times at El Royale, and then I'll be watching this. and SNL. So that's pretty much my weekend right there.
It's all gone. There goes the weekend. So much for time off, man.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Better Call Saul, which is a show that I'm way behind on. But it wrapped up its fourth season, and I'm assuming you loved it.
I liked it very, very much.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
you really need to catch up. I don't know when you're going to find the time, but got to catch up.
Yeah, I understand. But tell everybody about how you felt about this season. And you've been covering it really closely, talking with people who've worked on the show throughout the season. So talk a little bit about your season with Better Call Saul.
Well, I don't do this all that much. We have lots of great writers who do kind of regular weekly show coverage on Hollywood Reporter's live feed blog, and I really only do this when there are shows where I like digging into them, and I know that the people working on the shows put as much effort into thinking about the show they're making as I put into trying to sort of unpack everything. And so really in recent years, what I've done weekly interviews on have been this, Better Call Saul, and Fargo, because those are just shows where everybody involved is kind of on the same page and has things to say. And Better Call Saul, just, it is such a top-to-bottom, calculated, thought-out, planned-out show, and this season was like that. It continued Jimmy McGill's journey into becoming Saul Goodman, and that's not a spoiler in any way. That's where we know the whole thing is going, but this season probably featured Bob Odenkirk at his very best. Ray Seahorn, I promise you, if you get into Better Call Saul, you will love Ray Seahorn so much because she is so good and so fundamentally underrated that she has not yet received an Emmy nomination or any sort of awards recognition for the show is just a crime. And I hope that this is the year that changes it, because this was so very much her season, in addition to Bob Odenkirk, who's always great. It's just a good show. It's a show that is always smartly written, smartly directed. It looks wonderful. It's one of the best shot shows on television. It's also a brilliantly edited show. I mean, I interviewed the show's editor, and I don't do that very often, and I'm not
right.
sure I honestly did it all that well, because the thing about editing is that if you're not in the room, you don't necessarily know what an editor has to work with, so you don't know what they do. But we talked a lot about montages, and that was a fun conversation to have, so why not? But yeah, I mean, over the course of a full season, I talked to 10 people from the show, and I talked to actors, writers, directors, and again, one editor, and it was a pleasure each week because everybody was smart and everybody had things to say about the show that were intelligent things to say. And when you have a cast and crew of intelligent people all on the same page, you can see it on the screen, and I think you can see the opposite just as frequently.
Yeah, that's true. Now, the show itself, do they have an end? Do they have an end in sight? Do they know when it's going to end? I mean, is it going to be 2-3 more seasons? One season? What are they thinking?
If I had to guess, I would guess it's probably going to be 2 more seasons, but that is 100% a guess. Mm-hmm. I interviewed showrunner Peter Gould for the finale, and they already have a renewal for 5th season, so they're fine. And he admitted that they've had, it sounded like, very loose conversations with AMC and with Sony about how long the show has to go. And I don't think it's a show that can last forever, because we know eventually it's going to hit the timeline of Breaking Bad, and that's where it's going. It just can't take forever to get there, because it's a prequel, and yet the actors keep on aging, and it's
right.
In some cases a tiny bit distracting. And they keep bringing in people from the Breaking Bad universe. They have yet to totally give up and bring in Bryan Cranston or Aaron Paul or Anna Gunn or any of the biggest stars from the show, but they've definitely brought in a lot of the supporting players and a lot of the interesting character actors from that world. I would guess 2 seasons, 3 at the max. They're smart, and smart shows and showrunners very rarely dramatically overstay their welcome, and I assume they will not. I think they know where they have to get the show, and they will figure out exactly how long it's going to take them to get there.
Does it get good numbers? I don't think it doesn't get as good numbers as Breaking Bad did, does it?
No, it doesn't. It definitely not towards the end when Breaking Bad became a phenomenon.
Right.
But people kind of forget that there were 3 or 4 seasons where Breaking Bad was a somewhat stumbling little critical darling show with mediocre ratings, in the same way that Mad Men was basically for its entire run. And then there was this remarkable thing that happened when Breaking Bad went to Netflix, and suddenly it's the quintessential example of the Netflix effect, where suddenly everybody binged the show and the audience exploded in its last couple seasons. Better Call Saul doesn't do that, but it does very solidly for AMC, and kind of outside of AMC's zombie shows, it's one of the most solid performers they have going. I think there would be no reason why, given the combination of solid ratings and critical acclaim, why AMC would truncate the show in any way. So it really is just going to come down to when Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan say, okay, we've got this many episodes left. And, that's just the good thing about doing a good and acclaimed show on cable, is that most of the time these days you will get the opportunity to end on your own terms. And so I trust that AMC will let these guys stick the landing, knock on wood.
Got it. Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots more TV to talk about. We'll take a break for the news, and we'll get back to it right after this. Welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, 3 songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about nostalgia reunion tours and how good or bad they have been, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. But let's get back to the conversation about TV. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly to talk TV. Always a lot to talk about. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. So let's get back to it. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So before the break, I mentioned that I was going to watch SNL. Have you watched the first two episodes of the season?
I have. I thought that neither one I thought was particularly good. I thought the first episode had moments and yet really frustratingly wasted Adam Driver. And I think that Adam Driver has become a really good SNL host in like only a couple times. Yeah. I think he's just good at this, and that they gave him so little to do or put so little of quality around him is really frustrating. And then they had no clue what to do with Awkwafina last week. They hadn't even watched Crazy Rich Asians. It was like they had no idea of what this woman can do that's funny, and she's really tremendously funny and fairly versatile, and they gave her nothing to do this past week. I found that infuriating, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to a certain extent, but there were a couple things in last week's show that I thought were hilarious. Particularly, I don't know why, but I thought that the dance-off thing was hysterical, where they were dancing to the game show themes. I have no idea why, but I laughed my ass off during that. I thought it was hilarious. So
I thought it was decent. That's the kind of skit, though, that I would have expected to be in the home stretch of the show. The fact that they were leading with that sketch.
Yeah.
Kind of gave me an indication of where the rest of the show was going to go.
Yeah, well, I thought the premiere was good. I thought I thought Matt Damon was really funny, and it was a genuine surprise that he showed up. It was nice. I Dratch had three lines, but she was there. But I thought the cold open was. I thought they handled the cold open really well. And I thought that was really funny. It was better than the cold open this last week, even though they had a very short time. They had a very very short time to write it.
Yeah, I'm mostly quite pleased that we haven't had to deal with Alec Baldwin in the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel like I need to cross my fingers and that I just jinxed that one. I thought Matt Damon was good. I really, really wanted Mark McKinney to play Kavanaugh. Because to me, that's both a wonderful physical match and also a wonderful vocal match, and it wouldn't have been as big a quote unquote star.
Yeah.
But to me, McKinney has exactly the sort of former party boy Muppet vibe that Brett McKinney has.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can see it.
I would have. Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, not Brett McKinney. But anyway, yeah, I would have loved to have seen that. But no, Matt Damon was funny and fine, and that sketch was decent. And then, of course, that whole episode just became about Kanye, and at least Pete Davidson had a funny bit on that this past week.
Yeah, he did. Pete Davidson just kills it on Weekend Update. I just think he, especially with all the stuff that he's doing right now in his real life and how that's affected everything. I think his Weekend Update appearances are highlights. I just think in sketches he's fine, but he really excels in Weekend Update. That's his strength, I think.
Well, he's not huge. I don't think he's versatile as an actor or as a performance. As a performer, it just happens that he's a very funny guy. I do think that the show is overestimating exactly how excited I am about his engagement to Ariana Grande.
Right,
I think that the fact that there were three different sketches in the first week that touched on it might have been a little bit more than I needed. But he's good. I like him. I think he adds something consistently quirky and weird and different, and especially when he's on Weekend Update. Yeah. When he does his thing there, I think he's very, very good.
Yeah. So this week is coming up on Saturday is Seth Meyers. I think that should be solid. Seth Meyers and Paul Simon, those are veterans from SNL. Hopefully they'll step up their game this week.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. You would figure they might as well under those circumstances. Like, I'm assuming Paul Simon will be in multiple sketches.
Oh yeah,
I assume. So at that point, why not just let him host and musical guest? It's Paul Simon; he can do whatever he wants. But I'll be interested to see what they do with Seth, because when he was on the show, he was head writer and he was on Weekend Update and all that, but he wasn't really a regular sketch guy, and so. Sometimes those people do very well when they come back. Tina Fey obviously has been very versatile when she's hosted coming back, and that wasn't really her deal on the show. So I'll be interested to see what they do with Seth, because he's obviously very funny.
He is, and it will be interesting to see what they do, because early on, before he got the update spot, before he became the anchor, he was in some sketches, and a few of them were recurring. like the Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers, the two Irish guys who hosted the talk show, who would get drunk in the pub and cry.
Totally haven't thought about that one in 15 years. So okay, what else? Give me more, because I can't remember any of them. But now I remember that one.
He was also there was a blooper show that he hosted called Zing or something like that, where they did it a few times. Christopher Walken came on, and instead of like playing a prank, he beat the hell out of somebody with a tire iron and killed him. And that's supposed to be that was I can't remember what the name of the sketch was, but it was the name of the show, and it was supposed to be a blooper show, like a hidden camera blooper show. And Christopher Walken comes out and kills a guy in his sketch, in his bit. But that was something he hosted. And I'm trying to remember what imitate, because he did a few imitations. Oh, you know who he did, which we can't do now. He was what's the guy who hosted the Extreme Makeover show, the house makeover show. Oh, he's always shirtless.
Ty Pennington. Ty Pennington?
Yeah. That was a recurring sketch for Seth. He did that a few times, but you can't go back to that. Now I don't know. Do you think that maybe they'll let him sit behind the desk and Colin Jost like sit out a segment? And you know, because
I don't think they would let him take over
right
for one of them. I think for sure he will have some hefty capacity in Weekend Update, but yeah. No, I don't think there's any way that he would actually take either of their positions for a week.
Because I know when Poehler shows up all the time, they let her get behind the desk, and you know, and it would be nice if she made a surprise visit, and they did really. That would be kind of fun.
This would be not surprising. Yeah. I would, in fact, almost even expect. I would hope for that.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. And maybe they'll bring Fallon back. He's just, you know, he's downstairs, so bring him back and have him do the two Irish guys skit. That might be something.
Fallon is always happy to drop by. I don't believe he ever tells Lorne Michaels. Lorne Michaels, no. So,
yeah, right. So it'll be interesting to see. So far, you know, I thought the first episode was pretty solid. I agree with you about wasting Adam Driver, but I also agree with you that he's turned out to be a surprisingly terrific host on the show. There were a few moments in last week's episode that I thought was interesting, and I couldn't turn it off fast enough at the end. That's true. But I'm looking forward to this weekend. So, okay, let's get to, you know, a show that I'm seeing commercials for. Every commercial for it or every trailer for it makes me laugh out loud, and that's the Romanoffs.
Which is totally what Matt Weiner's going for.
No, I mean, but it cracked. I don't know. I have no idea why, but I've been laughing at the trailers for these things constantly. And this is Matthew Weiner's new show from the creator of Mad Men. And so tell me, this is an Amazon show. So tell me what it's, but this is an anthology thing, right?
It is an anthology thing, and it is really strange. And it is really uneven, and it is going to really polarize people. And a lot of people are going to simply straight up hate us.
Okay.
And I did not. Basically, the connective tissue is that these are eight stories about contemporary people who trace their lineage to the Romanov family, to the Russian royal family.
Right.
Period. Full stop. That is the connective tissue. There are one or two actors who make crossover appearances between, I believe, a couple episodes, but There is no through line. There is no eight-episode narrative, nothing. It is eight episodes. Matt Weiner directed all eight and wrote or co-wrote, I believe, six of them. And they're long. For whatever reason, Netflix has been able to get away with calling Black Mirror episodes movies, and I've ranted with you plenty about that.
Yeah.
But these are legitimately, basically, feature films he's making. They've only sent out the first three episodes or installments or whatever to critics, and they're all basically 90 minutes, between 84 and 90 minutes. And they're so long that Amazon is not dropping the series all at once. The first two episodes are premiering on Friday, and then it will be a weekly thing. So it gives one the opportunity to watch a weekly Matt Weiner movie. That assumes that you didn't watch or don't remember the actual movie that Matt Weiner directed, which was not very good. there are a lot of really big stars, but the tone varies widely between episodes. The locations vary wildly. The first installment is about a elderly Parisian woman whose relatives are hoping that she's going to leave them her fantastic Parisian apartment, and instead she befriends the maid, who is a young Muslim woman, and her nephew is played by Aaron Eckhart. He's the biggest star in the first of the installments. And it's kind of more contemplative, and it's set in Paris and uses Paris nicely. The second installment is kind of a dark comedy with strange genre twists, a little bit like a late Woody Allen movie, because he's had several in recent years of people who have sort of given thought to infidelities and become racked with guilt and whatever. And it stars Corey Stahl and Janet Montgomery and Carrie Bechet, who is just wonderful, and Noah Wiley. The tone is all over the place, but again, it's got some good moments. And then the third installment is about an actress who goes to Austria to appear in a miniseries about the Romanovs, and the actress is played by Christina Hendricks, and the director of the miniseries that she's in is played by Isabelle Huppert. And
whoa,
that one was probably there's a lot of great casting. It's fantastic casting. If you keep watching down the road, then you know, people in upcoming installments include Mad Men veterans like John Slattery, actors like Diane Lane. It's a great cast. None of the three installments I've seen is consistent. They all have very good moments, and they have variable amounts of infuriating moments. And interestingly, the one about the actress going to Austria, which sort of takes on haunted house and horror elements and plays a little bit like a semi-comedic Roman Polanski film in some weird ways. To me, it was my favorite of them. It's also probably the most uneven of them. So it just comes down to whether the highs are high enough to exceed the lows. And some people are going to walk away probably from the first episode and feel so frustrated and annoyed with the darn thing. And the Parisian episode is particularly bloated. It is, again, just under 90 minutes. It totally could have been done in 45 without any problems. And basically, this is Matt Weiner being given no particular limitations and doing exactly what he wants to do for some reason. And there are definitely meditations on identity and heritage and people looking for nobility in their pasts, perhaps because their presents are disappointing. There are interesting themes that he's working out here. I look forward to watching more episodes, even knowing that I'm probably going to be ticked off and perhaps enchanted in equal measures. As one of the biggest Mad Men fans out there, I would love to say that this is anywhere near on that level. It's not, and I think a lot of people are going to get alienated by this one.
Okay, well, that's the Romanoffs on Amazon. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we talk TV every 2 weeks. He's a critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back, more TV talk after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's all coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here. Dan Feinberg is with us. We talk TV every couple of weeks. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, have you seen Camping, the new HBO show?
I've seen a couple episodes of Camping, and what I keep telling people is that if you thought that Hannah from Girls was one of the most annoying characters you'd ever seen on a TV show, Lena Dunham has gone out of her way to create an even more annoying character in Camping and gotten the lovable Jennifer Garner to play the character. And I think it's intentional. The question, again, is whether people are going to be tolerant of that, and it almost feels like an experiment, as if she's saying, oh, you thought this character was annoying when I played a variation on an annoying character. Let's see if you're more generous when the lovable Jennifer Garner plays it. And I think there's a challenge to that. It's a prickly show. My colleague, Tim Goodman, wrote the review, and he hated the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen two episodes. I don't hate it, but it is a hard show to warm up to, and it's a definite challenge to figure out how to embrace the Jennifer Garner character. The conceit of the show, for people who don't know, is that it's basically a woman and her husband. So Jennifer Garner and David Tennant plays her husband, and friends and relatives get together for a weekend camping trip, and things go askew, basically. And Jennifer Garner's character is extremely type A, also balancing a lot of very unusual health problems, and manages to overschedule and overprogram everything, and yet all of her friends want everything to be more easygoing and fun and relaxing, and she responds badly to that, and ideally hilarity ensues, but it's more kind of cringeworthy hilarity. It's an interesting show. I'm going to have to watch more episodes. So far, I've only seen two. I think it's only a 6-episode run. I think I'll be interested to see if the goal is, by the end of the 6th episode, to kind of trick viewers into finding affection for this woman. And that's kind of the game of the show, is we're going to introduce this character who's going to have you pulling your hair out, and then by the end, we're going to make you understand and empathize. And there's no reason why that shouldn't work. Again, Hannah on Girls was a mighty annoying character, and I often felt a lot of warmth for her. I also often felt a lot of annoyance for her, but that was all part of what the show wanted me to do. And I think this show wants somewhat similar things. It's got a lot of very good people in its supporting cast, including the always funny Brett Gelman, who pops up in nearly everything and is very funny. Ione Skye pops up. When did you last see her?
Oh,
she's
wow.
doing fine.
Awesome. That's great.
Stay there.
That's great.
It's all about finding the right hook. Going right off the Romanoffs here, it is not a show that is going to have the same response from any two people. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be very hard to take the main character at all. I think there is going to be an audience out there, though, that's going to watch her and feel like she's very relatable, and I think that it will be interesting to see how those audiences get along.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, it's on my DVR. I'm curious about it. I was never a big giant Girls fan. Now, did Dunham direct the episodes?
I believe she and or Jenny Connor, her writing partner, wrote and or directed at least the first group of episodes. I can't speak for all six,
okay.
But yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see about
and
that one.
And it's based on a British show that I am not familiar with, though I've heard very good things about the British show, and it might be interesting down the road to seek that show out and see how they play differently.
All right. Well, that's interesting. So that's Camping, which actually will debut on Sunday on HBO. So, all right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He talks with us every couple of weeks. You follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We're breaking for news here, and then we come back and we'll talk more TV with Dan. Welcome. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and I will be joining the Steve Cochran gang, as I do every Thursday morning at 6:20. We'll preview some of the movies coming out this weekend and talk about some entertainment, pop culture stuff. That's all happening a little bit later on. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Get your Triple Play Thursday requests in. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. We're also going to talk about reunion tours and nostalgia tours. New Kids on the Block are back. So we're going to talk a little bit about that if you've gone to any of those, or who would you like to see return. And then we got some other stuff we're going to be talking about as well. And we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, though. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Right now, let's get back to the conversation we're having with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us biweekly to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Now, I was never a Murphy Brown watcher, and I know that like the reboots are the thing now. So, have you watched Murphy Brown?
I have watched 3 episodes of Murphy Brown, which premiered a couple weeks ago to middling numbers, but then at least held those numbers the following week. So CBS probably went from somewhat disappointed to a kind of resigned shrug by the following week. And I would say that if you were never a fan of Murphy Brown in the first place, you definitely don't want to or need to check in. I vividly remember how excited my parents were when Murphy Brown premiered. And I was 10 or 11 or something, and I remember loving the show, watching the show with them, and really enjoying the show for about 5 or 6 years, and then it kept going for a while. And when I rewatched the episodes, it turned out I did have some nostalgia for these characters, for their voices, for the kind of anger that they have about the world and how it translates very well from the characters they were 30 years ago to the current Trump world. Yeah. The show has become a little monomaniacal. You know, it's basically all Trump all the time at this point. And, you know, I guess for plenty of people, that's what life is. And so, you know, it did feel back in the day like Murphy Brown had a little bit more on its slash her mind. The biggest change in the show is that her son, Avery, who was, when last seen, played by a young Haley Joel Osment on the original show, is now played by the much more studly Jake McDormand from Limitless and Greek. You know, which is too bad, because Haley Joel Osment's been popping up in a lot of stuff lately, and he's really a funny, likable character actor at this point. You know, he didn't become a leading man. Oh, well, how many of us really do? You know, when he pops up in things, though, I go, oh, right, Haley Joel Osment's funny. Haley Joel Osment's good. But they decided they did not want to go with that. They decided to go with a hunk, and that's fine. And actually, I think that the relationship with Murphy and her son on the show is one of the better things about the new version. It, you know, it's not remarkable, and I think that in a year in which there were 5 or 6 really good sitcoms out there, that I could say, okay, here are 5 or 6 better sitcoms than this, I would not necessarily have all that much positive to say about Murphy Brown. But I think in this particular year, seeing a show that premieres where the characters have their voices, the actors know their characters and play them in consistent ways, there's a big plus to that. And it kind of makes me understand the reboot culture in a different way, which is if the networks are too lazy or creatively bankrupt to come up with anything new. I mean, it isn't just that there's comfort in a reboot, it's that it saves a lot of time because they don't need to find a way to write new characters. They can just write to the characters. And, you know, it's not a creatively encouraging way to look at this, but looking at all the other new sitcoms and how disappointing so many of them are, I can appreciate some of the comfort in what Murphy Brown is doing.
Okay. All right. So there's Murphy Brown, which started now. I watched 2 sitcoms that I wanted to mention because they were so awful. So the first one is the, and I'm, you know what, I forgot the name of it, but it's the one that takes place at the old folks' home with Martin Mull, and Vicki Lawrence.
That is the Cool Kids.
And David Alan Grier, and I watched the first episode of that. It was unspeakable. And you know, and Charlie Day is like one of the creators on the show, and it's the cast. I mean, you can't argue with that cast. All of those people. I love all of those people. But my God, was that terrible? Have you seen it?
It is a colossal waste of talent.
Yes.
There's no question. It is a colossal waste of talent. I do think I chuckled a couple times because Leslie Jordan's able to make things funny. David Alan Grier is able to make things funny. Vicki Lawrence is able to make things funny, but they shouldn't have to work as hard as they are.
Absolutely.
Someone should give them things that are actually of their caliber. And no, it's not that. If someone had not told you that Charlie Day created the show and asked you to guess based on that pilot who created the show, you would never in a million years.
No.
Get to Charlie Day as a possible creator of
Absolutely
that show.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. No, that was 30 minutes that I'm never going to get back. I mean, I just was, I was astonished at how bad it was. And then not as bad, but also not good, was The Neighborhood. And again, lots of people in that show that I really, really, really like. And, wow. And I know that you reviewed that in tandem with Happy Together.
Yes, and having only seen at that point one episode of each, and they're in an hour block on Monday night on CBS, so it's pretty easy. And basically, the review for both of them was the same. It's these are really, really talented people who deserve much better than this material that they're given. And then I did watch the second episode of both this week, and I feel as if The Neighborhood might have gotten a hair better, and I might be inclined to give it another episode or two. I think I am done with Happy Together. Happy Together has this really broad premise that relates to the fact that one of the show's producers, who's also a producer on your favorite late night show with James Corden.
Oh boy! All right,
but he had an experience where One Direction star Harry Styles lived with him and his wife for 18 months, and hilarity ensued. So the premise is that this couple has a rock star move in with them. By the second episode, it didn't even know why that premise was funny anymore. Like it was like they were desperate to run away from it. So I think I'm done with Happy Together. The Neighborhood. The cast is so good.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've watched the first two episodes of The Neighborhood, too. I didn't like either of them, but I watched them both, and I will probably continue to watch a little bit because, you know, there are moments in the show that, you know, like you were saying about the Cool Kids, that, you know, you can't help but laugh because these people are so talented. But, man, the writing is not strong at all on that show. So
It's really not, and yeah, I think there was something that Cedric the Entertainer did in this past episode that made me laugh, and Tashina Arnold is always good.
Yep.
I don't think they have a clue yet how to write for Max Greenfield, and that worries me, because he is funny, and I don't think you'd know it from this. Beth Beers, I think, did something funny in this episode, but I don't remember anymore what it was, so it must have been really memorable. Honestly, the part of the show that I'm liking best are the two people who aren't the big name stars, the two actors playing Cedric the Entertainer's sons, Marcel Spears and Sean McKinney. They're to me the funniest people in the show, and they're the actors who, you know, I've seen them in things before, but Marcel Spears was in The Mayor last year, and I've seen Sean McKinney in several things. But they're obviously not the big-ticket actors, and they're the ones who just seem like they're kind of playing original characters and being funny, and it's just a writing problem, and it's a writing problem for all three of the shows that we've talked about in this thing. These are all great actors. These are actors who have pedigrees that show that they can certainly be TV stars. They can be breakout TV stars. They can be hilarious, all of them, and they just need a little help, and they're not getting it.
No, they're not. All right. Well, let's move on to something that I think you think is better. And that would be the debut of the CW's new show, All American. Tell us about this one.
In my review, I did dub All American the best new broadcast drama pilot of the fall.
There
and
you go.
That's because I don't know what the alternative is. because this is the one that I would give a C plus B minus to. So yay! it is based on the true story of Spencer Paysinger, who played ultimately in the NFL briefly for the Giants and several other teams, and it's the story of a young football player for South Crenshaw High who gets recruited to come play for a coach on the verge of losing his job, played by Taye Diggs, at Beverly Hills High. And wouldn't you know it, it turns out that Beverly Hills is different from Crenshaw. And and he doesn't instantly fit in his new neighborhood. And the show is so much trying to blend the DNA of Friday Night Lights and the OC. Mm. And, you know, if you're going to blend the DNA of two shows, those are two shows that I loved. And they're also, somewhat unfortunately, two shows that really had two of the best pilots, really, ever. I mean, the Friday Night Lights pilot, I've probably watched it 20 times.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece. It makes me cry every single time.
Yeah.
And the pilot for the OC, you know, Josh Schwartz wrote it. Doug Liman directed it. It's hilarious at times. It sets up the entire show. It's such a good pilot. And this is not that good. It has a good and interesting fish-out-of-water premise. It does some interesting things with shooting in Los Angeles. It does some good stuff in South Central, tries to get away from a few stereotypes. The main character has a friend from his neighborhood, played by Breezy, who was on Empire, and she's a high school character who's dealing with coming out of the closet slowly, or not really coming out of the closet, because the way she puts it is anyone who looks at her knew that she was a lesbian already, but she hasn't told her parents, and she's being picked on, and she's always had this friend of hers to support her, and now he's gone off to Beverly Hills, and there's some fresh stuff there. There are also weird dramatic contrivances. They don't do all that well with the football accuracy, and I've seen three episodes now, and it doesn't really feel yet to me like it's settling into its own voice. It still feels like it's being other shows. But it is a genre that, you know, I'm a sucker for. And I'm a sucker for underdog sports stories. A good high school show, that's the kind of thing that I will always happily watch. And so far, this is okay. And in a fall of awful stuff, okay starts to look a lot better, I guess.
Wow, that's just depressing.
Honestly, All American is fine, and the fact that I'm having to elevate fine to a position of high acclaim is something else, but it's got potential. This could be a decent show, and the CW has a handful of good shows that aren't its superhero shows, and given time, I think this is a show that could become something really solid, and so I hope it does, because it does have potential, and a lot of this fall's stuff has no potential whatsoever.
In terms of numbers for the new fall season, especially on the broadcast, are people watching these shows?
Some of them. Manifest on NBC is doing fairly well. I stopped watching that one after the second episode.
Me too.
I didn't like the pilot. I thought the second episode was just unbearable.
Yep.
I was like, screw this.
Yep. I did the exact same thing, Dan. I watched the first one, didn't like it, watched the second one, not going back.
Yep, and that's just fine. You know, not everything, and it seems to be doing okay, and I assume that if it doesn't get a little bit better eventually, the numbers are going to start dropping, but NBC's happy with it. New Amsterdam today got picked up for a full season, back nine, and it's doing solidly, and I think it's not a horrible show, and I understand the appeal of that kind of medical procedural, and I think that when you look at the success of something like Good Doctor on ABC, you see that there's an audience for it. So yeah. NBC recognizes it, and it, you know, it's a comfort place for people, and that's fine. What else is doing decently? The Neighborhood did okay. FBI has held its audience fairly well. CBS's FBI, and if you know, that's the kind of show where if it can't succeed on CBS,
right,
what is going to succeed, and right, where is it going to succeed?
Right.
But there's no breakout smash,
right,
so far. And there's also, for whatever it's worth, no out and out, we need to pull this off the schedule, it's a tremendous stinker, oy vey, disaster yet.
Okay.
So, but then again, at this point, networks aren't canceling things instantly anymore. They have to give things a little bit more of a shot. So,
right,
just where we are in network TV.
There you go. All right, Dan, always a pleasure. People can read you at The Hollywood Reporter, follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Sounds good, Nick.
Okay, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. You can follow him again on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print and read all of his stuff there, F-I-E-N. Always great to talk to Dan. All right, we got to take a break here, and we shall return. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday.
Give me a Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah. And that's one artist, three songs. We got our first request in, 312-981-7200. 815 area code. Stiff Little Fingers with Safe as Houses. Stiff Little Fingers, one of my ex-wife Heather's favorite bands. Loves. I never heard of them until I was with Heather. Heather's a punk rock girl. She enjoys the punk rock. So, yeah. And Stiff Little Fingers. A lot of people love that band. So, you ever hear Stiff Little Fingers, Dan?
I first heard of them actually from High Fidelity.
Yes. Because yes, yes, yes.
They were, when what was the other guy's name?
Dick.
Dick, was talking to Sarah Gilbert's character, and they were talking about Green Day, I believe. She said it's, Stiff Little Fingers and the Clash, and was the composite for Green Day.
Yeah. I totally forgot about that reference, but yes.
But I remember being like, hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my ex is still a total punk rock girl, and she turned me on to a band called No Means No, which is a Canadian, by the way, a Canadian. They're not really punk. They're kind of punk, but they're really pretty heavy. And I'd never heard of them before I met Heather. And then I saw them while we were together. I saw them twice in concert. They were amazing, and they rule. You know, we were talking yesterday. Rick Geezer was in studio yesterday. We were talking one of the songs that we played. Rick Geezer does the sports songs, where it's, you know, songs that were performed by athletes or people that are involved in the world of sports, managers and things like that. And we have a lot of fun with it. Some of them are terrible. Some of them are so bad that they're awesome and hilarious. And others are really good. Like some of these athletes can really, really sing or play an instrument. So we played some hockey stuff yesterday, and one of the things that we played, they said that the Hanson brothers were on there. And I was like, oh, the Hanson brothers from Slapshot. And he said, no, they're not. That's what I thought it was. But see, here's another thing. The guys in No Means No have a spinoff band. Then they call themselves the Hansons. So I don't know if maybe it was those guys that appeared on it. I'm not really sure. But, yeah, I'm surprised Canadian Bill has not given us a request for some... No Means No.
There's still time.
We played...
It's a vast lexicon of Canadian artists out there.
Oh, I told you this in the car, but this is... I have to say this now, since we're talking about Canada. As you know, I am, you know, the biggest Saga fan in the world, and Saga is from Canada. And we mentioned Saga a lot on the show. And then we've discovered that they have an incredible fan base in, of all places, Puerto Rico, which I found to be sort of mind-blowing and very surprising and also really cool. I was like, wow, that's awesome. So I sent a friend request to Michael Sadler, who is on Facebook, and people probably don't know who Michael Sadler is, but Michael Sadler is the lead singer of Saga. So I sent him a friend request a little while ago, and he accepted my friend request. So now I'm friends with Michael Sadler on Facebook from Saga, so that's thrilling for me. But he, you know, now I get to see his posts and stuff. And last night he did a check-in. You know how you check in on Facebook and go, hey, I'm at this theater watching this movie, or I'm at this play, or, you know, I'm at a concert here at, the United Center, that kind of thing. He checked in, And his check-in was he was at the opening of the Hard Rock Cafe in San Juan.
Yeah.
And I went, all right. I mean, he must, like, have major connections there. He's going to the opening of the Hard Rock Cafe in San Juan. And I was like, that's appropriate, considering Saga, you know, is Puerto Rico's favorite band, even though they're from Canada. And I guess he played like a solo gig there or something. I don't know. But that's a little detail about Saga that I found thrilling. And for my birthday, you guys got me a Saga tour t-shirt from Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rico tour.
Indeed.
And it's the Saga logo in the colors of the Puerto Rican flag. Which is, I wear with pride. So, all right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up next, and then we're going to talk about, speaking of nostalgia tours, I didn't even realize that that's the segue I was doing. New Kids on the Block announced a tour, and I want to talk about, to you guys, who would you like to see reunited? What artists would you like to see back on the road? What nostalgia tour would you like to see? Or if you've gone to any of these very popular nostalgia tours, who did you see and how good were they or how bad were they? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Thursday morning. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, baby, Triple Play Thursday. That means you request one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, 815 area code requesting Stiff Little Fingers, and that's Alternative Ulster. 312-981-7200. All right. We just heard that the New Kids on the Block are celebrating their 30th anniversary of their 1988 breakout album, Hangin' Tough. God, that was 30 years ago, Dan.
Pretty crazy.
Hangin' Tough. So the New Kids on the Block is 30th anniversary. On Sunday night with a special performance, they had a special performance at the Apollo Theater, Dan. And, they've got a new tour announcement that's going to have the bands joining forces with other pop music icons. It's called the Mixtape Tour. Well, of course it is. What else are you going to call it? You got to call it the Mixtape Tour. The Mixtape Tour will see New Kids on the Block, Donnie Wahlberg, Jordan Knight, Jonathan Knight, Joey McIntyre, and Danny Wood. Is that all of them?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Hitting the Road in 2019. With 80s music stars Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, and hip-hop acts Salt-N-Pepa and Naughty by Nature. We're creating a mixtape on tour every night in every city, Wahlberg said during an appearance on the Today Show. It's going to be fun, happiness, emotions, tears, joy, love, most of all. Band has previously toured with the Backstreet Boys, Boys to Men, 98 Degrees, TLC, Nelly, and Paula Abdul. And as part of the anniversary, the band also debuted 80s Baby, a new song and throwback video featuring all five acts on the tour to the sold-out Apollo audience on Sunday, marking the first time that NKOTB has performed at the legendary venue since appearing on Apollo's famous amateur night to sing Please Don't Go Girl 30 years ago. It's all 80s, taking you back to the time you love, Salt-N-Pepa's Cheryl James said of the new song. We're celebrating 30th anniversary of Hangin' Tough and our 30th appearance at the Apollo and the 30th anniversary of the day we all fell in love with you amazing fans, said Wahlberg, who teared up as he spoke to the packed Apollo crowd. The band confirmed Hangin' Tough will also get a special anniversary reissue in early 2019 with new unreleased music. The album, which features the hits You Got It, The Right Stuff, I'll Be Loving You Forever. It was the group's number one, the first number one on the Billboard Hot 100, was the second album released by the group in 1988. Kicking off May 2nd in Cincinnati, the mixtape tour will stop in 53 cities and end in Hollywood, Florida on July 14th. Tickets go on sale to the general public tomorrow, everybody. Get your credit card ready. You can get them at Ticketmaster.com. Where are they playing here? Are they playing here?
Allstate Arena, June 14th.
June 14th at the Allstate Arena. So you'll get to see New Kids on the Block, Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, Salt-N-Pepa, Peppa, and Naughty by Nature. So there you go. You know who would probably go to that? I bet Esmeralda would go.
I would imagine.
That would be something I believe she would go. So there now, it's the mixed. I love the name of it, the mixtape tour. 312-981-7200. Would you go to this? And if you, who would you like to see go back out on the road? You know, some of the reunion tours that you've that we've seen before, and some of the nostalgia tours. But that's a big lineup. That's a lot of music that night. Does it say how much the tickets are going for?
They look like they were ranging from the lowest was $39 that I saw, but I think it went up to like $199.
Okay, so between that range for New Kids on the Block, Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, Salt-N-Pepa, and Naughty by Nature.
I apologize. It goes up to $9,900, but that's the VIP package, so I'd imagine that includes a meet and greet with the bands.
I would hope so. For $9,900? $9,900? You should be on stage with Salt-N-Pepa. You're going to pay that.
Spin needs a break.
That's
you go
right.
Up Spin, there.
Spinderella's going to take a break. You go up and do some spinning.
It looks like the highest priced non-VIP is $140.
Okay. You know, that's not bad for, you know, all those acts.
Six bands, yeah.
And, you know, considering how much people are paying for, like, one band, you know, at some of these arena shows. So, well, there you go. And that'll bring back a lot of memories. And, of course, according to Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg, it's going to be fun, happiness, emotions, tear, joy, love, most of all. And he got all choked up. All right. Then he went out for a Wahlburger. So, we did, you know what, I will always, you know, because I make fun of Donnie Wahlberg because he's married to an idiot. And, but that story about him leaving that amazing tip always, I go back to that all the time. Whenever,
sure.
Whenever I'm like, what a jerk. I go, well, no, because what was the story behind that one again? Cause he left like a ridiculous tip.
Yeah. I forget what it was, but it was at a Waffle House.
Right.
And, he left a tip not only for the waitresses, but the cook staff as well.
Right.
Multiple thousands of dollars. And it was because his mom was a waitress at one point. So he knows how much of a struggle it is. And so he always wants to take care of them whenever he can.
And it was an astonishing amount of money he left too. So, all right. Anytime I make fun of Donnie Wahlberg, I think of that and go, oh man, I can't make fun of that guy. He did a very, very nice thing for some working people. Anyway, who do you want to see on the nostalgia tour? And have you gone?
$2,000 was the amount.
$2,000. On a bill at Waffle House, which is, you know, ridiculous. So who do you want to see on the nostalgia tour? 312-981-7200.
$82 was his check.
$82, $2,000 he left. That's a pretty good tip. That's a pretty good tip. All right. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I'd like to see the Who tour again, but I'd like to see them do more acoustic songs. One of my favorite albums is Odds and Sods.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff from that they never perform live.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's weird, you know, like a lot of the, some of the bands, the nostalgia bands, where, like, I mean, like half that band is dead. That's the problem. That's the only problem.
That's true. you can say that about virtually any British band, like the Kinks have toured.
Yeah.
But I think unless they have the Davis Brothers, all the other musicians in them are all accessories.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can't have the Kinks without the brothers, you know, but they hate each other.
Right.
So that's the problem is that they can't. But the Who, you know, they were just in town. What was it? I think it was a couple of years ago they were in town. And they did.
Yeah.
I think they toured with Tommy. I think that it was either Quadrophenia or Tommy. I remember they came to, and they had like a full orchestra, and it was Townsend and it was Daltrey. And then
right.
I think the last time anybody toured from that band, it was Daltrey. He came to town on his own, and he also did Tommy. He had like a full orchestra.
They still make it around. Okay, the Who's been augmented by Zach Starkey, who's Ringo's son. They have John Rabbit Bundrick on keyboards. Keith has his brother Simon playing guitar behind him.
Yeah.
Sometimes they bring along additional vocalists. There's a guy named Billy Nichols that sounds like Daughtry, and he's kind of a backup singer.
Okay. All right. Yeah, but they're still making the rounds, though. Yep, John. Thanks, man.
Can I name another band?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to say Wings reunite.
Oh, I mean,
too. You know, like McCartney tours with a band, but it's not like the original members of Wings.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of dead people in that band.
He could probably get a combination of people that have been in Wings that would say, "Yeah, I'd like to tour with you again."
Yeah.
But he's got a big ego. He can't, you know. Denny Lane co-wrote Mullet and Tyre.
Yeah,
and they've never worked again since like 80 or 81.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I personally think Wings is a criminally underrated band.
I agree.
People hate that band. People like, oh, Wings. They do, and I don't understand
it. Yeah, you get to thinking that they're kind of saccharine. I mean, when you think about all the harder rock in the '70s and all that, you know, punk rock and all that, and then you got Wings and Silly Love songs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, John. Thanks for the call.
Okay, Nick.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'm an unapologetic fan of Wings, and I know that they get a bum rap. The band gets a bum rap, and I don't really even know why, because they've got so many great songs. I mean, they have so many great songs, and they were huge in the '70s. You know, you go back to like 76, 77. They had some monstrous hits at that time, and they were good. I mean, and great musicians. Wings Over America, one of the best live albums ever. Yeah, they're a great band. I don't understand. I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, are not, you know, the John people are usually not Paul people, and those are the people that kind of go off on Wings. And even, you know, even Beatles fans, like full Beatles fans, are like, yeah, no, Wings stinks. I don't understand it. Do you like Wings, Dan?
You know, I can't say I've heard more than three of their songs. So
really?
I can't, yeah.
Oh, I think they're great, and I think Venus and Mars and Bands on the Run, those back to back, those albums are incredible. I also like London Town a lot too. I just think they're great. I mean that's one of the reasons why I'm a Paul guy is because of Wings, because of that stretch that he had in the '70s with Wings. And I know, and it's just for years I've heard backlash about them. You know, anytime I mention how much I like Wings, usually people are like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I like it because I think it's good." So they get a bum rap. Wings get a bum rap. I'm telling you. All right, Steve says, "I would love to see the Talking Heads reenact the Stop Making Sense concert." You know, that would be fun. Wonder if he can still fit into that big suit. Well, he just recently toured,
right?
And played. Did he play? Was it? He played Lala, right?
Or Riot Fest.
He played Riot Fest, right. And he had that, you know, the tour that he just finished. We're talking about David Byrne, obviously, one of the leaders of Talking Heads, where he had, there was no music stands or anything set up, no drums set up on the stage. All of the musicians kept moving. It was a bare stage, and the musicians would come out. There were three or four different drummers. And everybody who saw it said it was great. Jim Ryan, our buddy Jim Ryan, who talks music with us, saw it and said it was phenomenal. So that was, he just toured. But that would be cool to come back and reenact Stop Making Sense. Mark from Hobart says, Saga rules, Nick. Wow. They are the most underrated band ever, I think. If you're their number one fan, I'm their number two. Wow, there's somebody else out there besides me like Saga. Margaret in Bridgeport. I won free tickets to see Boston and Jefferson Starship about 2 years ago. That was a great concert. Yeah, man. Yeah. See, whenever you see these, here's the other thing. Whenever you see these sort of these nostalgia reunion tours, it's always important to check who's in the band. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Because was Grace Slick in the band? We just lost Marty Balin, by the way. Was it last week or the week before Marty Balin passed away? Bummer, you know. So you want to check, because you can go see Boston and there's like one guy in the band. It's not Tom Scholz. You'd be like, what? Sometimes they go out on tour. It's like Gallagher. You got Gallagher too. They have like bands that have the two behind them because there's like maybe one member but not a main member of the band that's touring around using the name. So. And you got, I would always, I mean, like I would not go see, you know, the thing is, I would not go see Journey without Steve Perry. I don't care.
301 texted Steve Perry is back performing solo, but it would be great to see him reunited with the rest of Journey.
I don't think that's going to happen. They parted on really, really bad terms. But yeah, Steve Perry's got a new album coming out. He's going to tour. I would love to see him get back with Journey. That would be, I'd love that. It'd be fantastic. So, all right, you guys, 312-981-7200. Who would you like to see on the nostalgic tour? And who have you seen? 312-981-7200. Man, get your tickets now for New Kids on the Block. Tickets go on sale tomorrow. I'm going to be on the phone for 4 hours straight trying to get my tickets. All right. So let's take a break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 815 area code with Stiff Little Fingers, Roots, Radicals, Rockers, and Reggae. That's what we're listening to this morning. And you get your requests in now, one artist, three songs. We'll play them in a little bit, 312-981-7200. Speaking of music, that's what we're going to be talking about here. If you want to jump in, we're talking about nostalgia tours. New Kids on the Block are going to go on a 30th anniversary tour. And who would you like to see in the reunion circuit or the nostalgia tour? Or who have you seen? 312-981-7200. By the way, we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up, and Steve Cochran at 6. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. I remember going to see, and you know, it was a big tour that just came through town that everybody went to. Was ELO when ELO came to town just a couple of months ago? You know, and they were doing the Out of the Blue anniversary tour, and you know, the whole deal was at the Allstate. It was at Allstate Arena, and a lot of people I know went, and it was interesting because people were posting that they were, you know, on my Facebook page, and everybody was like in their 50s. All the people, it was like all the dudes that went to go see Buffalo Tom last month, the same kind of thing. And you know who went, Dan, and it was his first time ever seeing them in all their glory, seeing ELO in all their glory. And he's been a fan like his whole life. Steve Krakow went.
Oh, really?
And he lost his mind. He was like, okay, it was one of the greatest shows ever. And yeah. But you know, I'd heard that it was phenomenal, that they basically kind of recreated the show that I saw in 77 or 76, whenever it was, 77, I think. No, maybe it was even 78, early 78. And then, of course, years later, my friend at Jewel telling me that it was all on tape. I was like, "Why? What?" I'll never forget it. We were working. I was working overnights. I was working the night crew at the Jewels on Southport. And me and this guy are stocking shelves in an aisle. And we're chatting about concerts that we've gone to and concerts that we really loved. And I mentioned how much I loved seeing the Out of the Blue tour at the Chicago Stadium, ELO, in early 1978. And he's like, "Oh yeah, that was a good tour, but you know, they lip synced that whole thing, and everything was on tape." And I'm like, "What? Like, this is one of my favorite like childhood memories, one of my favorite concerts of all time. My dad and I went; we both like flipped over it, thought it was the greatest thing we'd ever seen. You know, incredible laser light show. They came out in a spaceship. The spaceship opened up. And there they were in tails and tuxes with tails and stuff." Is 25 people on stage, string section, all that stuff. There's Jeff Lynne and the rest of the band. Lasers, you know, drawing words on the screen behind them. Smoke, all kinds. It was the coolest. And they did all the hits. They did, like, all the, you know, Out of the Blue album. And, you know, including Mr. Blue Sky, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. And I walked out of that theater, or the Chicago Stadium on air. I was like, "Oh, this is one of the greatest shows I've ever seen." And then it was probably... Well, where would that have been? What year? Probably about 8 years later. So for 8 years, I had that memory. 8 or 9 years, I had that memory of how much I loved. See, 78. No, it was even probably less than that. So if it was 70, I saw him in 78. That probably happened. He probably told me ruined my life in 84. So I had that memory for a little while, and he ruined it for me. The guy ruined it for me. He's like, "You realize everything that was all on tape and it was all lip synced." I'm like, "Why did you just? You ruined a childhood memory for me." You know, back in the old days, Dan, when you go to concerts in the 70s, not only was it just, you know, people blowing weed all over, like, the just fog of weed throughout. Nobody hiding that they're smoking weed. in the 70s. Like, if you walked into the stadium, the Chicago Stadium, to see a concert in the 70s, you walked out high just from secondhand smoke. I'm sure if I had, like, if I had to submit to a drug test in grade school, I would have positive for the effects of pot, because everybody was, it was just everywhere, like wafting fog. It was like a John Carpenter movie, but instead of fog, it was pot smoke. So, and people would throw rolls of toilet, would grab toilet paper and throw rolls of toilet paper across the building through the stadium. Beach balls would be flying everywhere. People would be blowing weed. And then, you know, the merch guys, there weren't like really official merch tables. They did every once in a while. You could get a program and maybe, but there was no restrictions on whether people who are printing up cheap t-shirts at home, there was no restrictions. They could be outside the stadium selling them. So I would get like the cheap t-shirts from outside, you know, from the bootleg dudes. And there'd be like 25 guys out there with different t-shirts that they printed up in their garage on crappy material that one washing and it would be stretched out, it would shrink or be stretched out. And I wore the t-shirts all the time. And I remember buying two t-shirts after the ELO outside, and I think they were like $4 or something like that. Or maybe five, you know, it was pretty, you know, inside, I don't know, you can get a program or something, and a t-shirt's like $10, but outside five. And then sometimes they'd barter with you. If they weren't selling enough t-shirts, they would say, hey, because they don't cost anything. They'd have a printer in the back there. And, you know, it's really funny because there were a lot of, I don't know if anybody remembers getting those t-shirts, those bootleg t-shirts from outside the stadiums or the amphitheater or any of that stuff. And they could stand right on the street. They could be right like in the parking lot or whatever. And they would be walking down the street. Sometimes they would just like walk along with you. Hey, take a look at this. You know, you see the guys outside of Wrigley.
Yeah,
they were everywhere. But there are rules for the guys outside of Wrigley. They have to be a certain amount.
I think they've gotten rid of the non. Endorsed ones. For a while there was guys who would just walk around with a big stick and all the shirts on it.
Yeah, but that's what they would do. That's what they would do outside. And it was you know, these guys had a very good thing going, because all the potheads would come out and go, $5 for a t-shirt, yeah, I just won't wash it, then it won't get ruined. But I don't know if anybody remembers that. Sometimes, I'll tell you this, a friend of mine went to go see Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, okay? He goes to see Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and he gets a t-shirt outside after the gig, gets a t-shirt outside that Emerson is misspelled. Like, he gets the shirt, and I'm like, dude, the Emerson is misspelled. He's like, what? It's like some goofball making some stupid t-shirt, but that was part of the fun of the 70s, going to concerts, man, getting really crappy cheap t-shirts that were ruined after one wash. And even when you washed them, they still smelled like pot. So, all right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up. Hey, what old school concerts have you been to? We can talk about that too. What were some of the great old school concerts that you've been to, and what nostalgia concerts would you like to go to now? 312-981-7200. News is coming up. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That is one artist, three songs. And Harold requested Don Henson with The Monster Jerk. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay. We are talking about nostalgia tours and bands, and also maybe classic concerts that you went to when you were younger, if you ever have any of those weird, like, sort of 70s memories that I have of going to those concerts. I started going to concerts at a really young age. I mean, really young. I was like 10 when I went to my first concert, and went to a ton of them in the 70s. So I got to experience a lot of really sort of cool classic concerts from that time period. And some of those bands are still around, and that's what we're talking about, the nostalgia tour. And this all happened because New Kids on the Block are celebrating the 30th anniversary of Hangin' Tough, man. Because if you think tough, it's New Kids on the Block. And they're all back, and they're touring with Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, Salt-N-Pepa, and Naughty by Nature. They'll be playing the June 14th at the Allstate Arena. Tickets go on sale tomorrow, so get ready to go to the mixtape tour, as they're calling it. So if you want to see certain acts, or if you've seen some certain nostalgia acts or some acts back in the day, 312-981-7200. We're talking concerts. 815 area code says, I saw Bobby Sherman, Davy Jones, and Peter Noon at the Rosemont Theater. And I mean the theater, not the Horizon. My husband took me knowing I'd been a big Bobby Sherman fan as a kid and never got to see them then. Never got to see him then. 630 area code says, Wings would have been had a much better reputation hadn't they made that awful Christmas song. That's actually McCartney solo. Don't blame that on Wings. That's Paul McCartney solo. That is not Paul McCartney and Wings. And yes, it's like the worst Christmas song of all time, and I'm a big Paul McCartney fan, but that's not Wings. Trucker Dingo says, Stevie Ray Vaughan, I was 4 years old when he passed away. I never saw him. I first saw him on a VHS tape. My uncle put it on to occupy me. He's the reason I learned to play guitar. Nick and Dan, you're the greatest. Thanks for keeping me company and awake on my drive. Thanks for listening, Dingo. We're happy to do that. 847 says Pink Floyd. Yeah, that would be, you know, I mean, Roger Waters tours a lot, you know, and does the big stadium tours. He just did, you know, a stadium tour a little while ago featuring The Wall, and he made it very, 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 very timely in terms of politics. But he tours those big stadiums and does the big crazy theatrical tours that he does. I don't know if they're ever going to get back together. I don't know if he's ever going to get back together with David Gilmour, though. It would be kind of cool, though. 847 area code says, hey, Nick, I can't tell. Are you being sarcastic about your love for boy bands? Did I say I loved boy bands, Dan? I love JT, Justin Timberlake. I wasn't crazy about NSYNC, but I love JT.
You do love that Backstreet Boys song.
Oh, I do like the Backstreet's Back All Right, where they're dressed up like mummy men and... Well, that's a... Oh, you know what? I didn't bring out my two farting friends this morning. I'll have to go get them during a break. Yeah, no, I don't love boy. I don't love boy bands. I don't know. Certain songs, I guess. 773 area code says, I'd love to see a reunion tour involving Blood, Sweat, and Tears or Seals and Crofts. Are they still around, those guys? Because they had some pretty big hits in the 70s. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. There's like 27 people in that band. Yeah, but those guys are classic. I bet they still kind of tour. I bet they're around, right? They probably do the circuit.
Dan Seals has passed away.
Oh, he did? Oh, I didn't know that. How long ago?
2009.
Oh, man. He's 9 years he's passed away? I didn't even... Oh, man, that sucks. 312 area code says, Humble Pie and Uriah Heep. Yeah, that would be cool. Uriah Heep especially. Those guys jam. JB, I saw a commercial for a Styx tour. I think they're playing in Indiana. Yeah, Styx. I've seen them. They bought a lot of time on the TV there, Dan.
Oh yeah.
I'm seeing commercials for the Styx tour. You know who's playing next week or in a couple of days maybe at the United Center.
Who's that?
The Eagles. And it's amazing that the Eagles and Glenn Frey is passed away. He's not with the band anymore. Joe Walsh is there. I believe Schmidt-Faced is still there.
Glad to hear it.
And of course, Don Henley. And those guys, you know, despite how I feel about the Eagles, they can, at this day and age, it's 2018, it's the 40th anniversary of Hotel California, which, I mean, all these anniversaries just make me feel like I am seriously the oldest dude in the world. The 40th anniversary of Hotel California. And those guys are selling out the United Center. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, I'm not a fan of the band, but you got to give it up. These guys in their 60s, you know, touring around, selling out the United Center. And one of the main guys has passed away. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. I got to say, I got to give it up for those guys. I wouldn't go if you paid me, but yeah. So the Eagles, man, they're on. It's not even like a nostalgia tour. That's a stadium tour, is what that is. Oh man! All right, here's Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
I went to the Beatles concert in 1964.
Wow. Where was it?
Yeah.
Where was it?
I'm pretty sure it was the old amphitheater. And I believe it was on Halsted.
Yeah, that's where the amphitheater. That's where the amphitheater was. The amphitheater was on Halsted.
Yeah, and I had front row mezzanine tickets really close to the stage, which really worked out well because there's all these goofy screaming girls.
Yeah.
That, and the sound systems weren't that sophisticated.
Yeah.
So I really did get to enjoy the concert, and it was, I'll never forget it.
Well, of course. Ever. No, that's legendary. That's classic. That's a yeah. That's a memory that you're going to have for a lifetime. I mean, that's just, you know, it's incredible. So.
And one other thing, I was the one that texted about the boy bands. I couldn't tell if you were being sarcastic or you really liked them.
Yeah, I don't. So, I mean, I like Justin Timberlake, and I'm not being sarcastic or ironic about that. I love Justin Timberlake. But, yeah, I've never been a big fan. I'm not a, I mean, you know, the Backstreet Boys have a couple songs that I like, but overall, nah, it's not my cup of tea.
Well, I've never, you know, I don't know much about them, but I thought, damn, does he really like them?
Yeah, no, no. All right, Lulu, thanks. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, she got to see the Beatles. My mom got to see Elvis. And not like Vegas Elvis, you know, like young, cool Elvis.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, people, I mean, and again, it's, you know, there's nothing bad about seeing Vegas Elvis. I would now, you know, I would have loved to have seen Elvis, you know. But like my mom saw him like when he was Elvis, like in the 60s, she saw him. And I think, and if I'm not mistaken, I think she he kissed her. If I'm not mistaken, like she got kissed, she was like,
oh,
right
boy.
Up in the front. Yeah. So, and she was an Elvis. My mom is an Elvis fan, you know, to the day he passed away, you know, and still to this day she loves Elvis.
It's quite a interesting family legacy you guys have between her getting kissed by Elvis and you picking up a girlfriend at an Elvis convention.
That's right, Elvis. An Elvis impersonators convention is where I met a girl that I dated for about a year. Leslie, and we refer to her as Leslie Presley because she's a big Elvis fan, like a massive Elvis fan. And we went, my friends and I went to this thing. It was at the whatever the hotel is that's next to the Rosemont Horizon, the hotel that's like right there, right, you know, right next to the expressway, the bridge there.
Yeah,
that I don't know. I can't remember what it was then. I'm sure it's a different, you know, company now. But that's where it was. And my friends found out about it. And were like, man, there's an Elvis Presley impersonators convention. This was before Hollywood or Honeymoon in Vegas. This was before Honeymoon in Vegas. It was the year before Honeymoon in Vegas. And so it was in June of 91, June 14th, 1991. So I remember seeing Leslie actually took a poster from it and kept it. And she had it. But so we go. And we went ironically. You know, just to see these goofballs, and I'm sure, you know, it was the same thing for Leslie, but Leslie was a bigger Elvis fan than I was at the time. And I'll never forget it, because that night I went to a screening, I went to a sneak preview of a movie, and I was like, I'll meet you guys, we'll meet up, and then we'll all head over, you know, we'll meet up at, I don't know if we met up at Demetrio's over there at Montrose and Central, where we used to hang out. Like all the time, I'm not sure if that. I think that's what happened because the sneak preview that I went to was at the Norwich, and I went by myself, and I saw the movie The Rocketeer. I remember I went to the sneak preview of The Rocketeer at the Norwich. You ever see The Rocketeer?
I did. That's a good movie
with Billy Campbell, and the lovely Jennifer Connelly. And I liked it. I had a really good time. And I met my friend
mustachioed
Timothy Dalton, right?
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. I enjoyed that movie, man. I liked that movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember really enjoying it. So I went to the sneak preview of that. And then I met my buddies over at the Montrose and Central at Demetrio's, where they always hung out. And they were like, let's go to this Elvis Presley impersonators thing. And we went and we showed up late. So we didn't pay. We just like went in. And we go in we kind of sneak in the back and we're watching, and it's like 365 Elvis impersonators. I guess it was like the idea was one for each day of the year. So they're like 365 Elvis impersonators, and they varied because there was like fat Elvis, there was thin Elvis, there was Jailhouse Rock Elvis, 68 Comeback Elvis, Vegas Elvis. I mean, there were Elvis, and there was a bunch of Elvi, like a lot of Elvi all over this hotel. And And this is a true story. The place was like packed and they were all performing, like each, you know, like an Elvis impersonator would get up there and start and do a song. And then the other Elvis impersonators would be in the back of the house going, man, he sucks. Man, I'm better than he is. Wait till I get up on that stage. I'll blow him away, man. So There's, you know, so, and there was a center, I'm not making this up, Dan, at the edge of the stage in this, you know, the big ballroom, whatever, with the biggest ballroom in this hotel, whatever it was, at the edge of the stage, there was a sign that said, please, only one scarf per person, because the Elvi would be giving scarves away. You know how Elvis would do that? He'd have somebody walk in with him on the edge of the stage with a handful of scarves. He'd put them on for a couple of minutes and then give them to a woman in the audience. And so these women, I guess they, you know, at other conventions, even though these guys weren't really Elvis, and it had been years since Elvis had passed away, they would hoard they would want more scarves for themselves. So they actually had to put a sign up that said, hey, only one scarf per person. So we're watching this, and we're being really, you know, jerky about it. And we're like, God, this is just ridiculous. And they had, like, you know, they had, like, stuff set up with tables and booths and stuff in the lobby. And so the big ending, the big climax of the evening was all the Elvi on stage. So all the Elvises are up there. It's like it's not the hugest stage in the world. It's like 300 Elvis impersonators up on this stage, or at least, you know, they're like a bunch of Elvis impersonators on the stage. Stage collapses on them, and it's there's sideburns and collars and scarves everywhere. They just go flying. There were like about 15 Elvises left on stage. The rest of them are on the ground. We just lost it. And then we're like, all right, let's just go to the bar. We go to the bar, and there's Elvi all over the place because they're just walking around. And so that's when I, you know, there's Leslie, a very attractive woman, and I noticed her right away. And so we hit it off, and then she got invited because all the Elvi were hitting on her because she was hot. So all the Elvi are hitting on her, and they invite her up to one of the Elvi rooms where all the Elvi are going to be. And she brings me along to the chagrin of the Elvi that were hitting on her. And I was, at that time, this was like in 91, I was wearing, this is what I wore, I'll never forget this because she noticed it. I was wearing, a 1906 Cubs jersey, which was black, a black pinstripe jersey with the bear, you know, the logo. I was wearing shorts and combat boots. I had really long hair at the time, like really long hair. It was in a ponytail, and I was wearing my Public Enemy hat to an Elvis impersonation. That's just what I wore to the movie. And so I stood out. I mean, I stood out like a sore thumb. And I'm with my goofy friends, and so we go, and I end up leaving with her. And so, but the guy was hitting, one of the Elvis guys was hitting on her. He's like, you know, you and I get married, you'd be Leslie Presley. It's like the stupidest line ever. No, it wouldn't, because your last name's not Presley. Your last name is probably Johnson, and you work at a hot dog stand. So, no. So, anyway, I took her away from Elvis. That's how I like to look at it. So, all right, everybody hang on. 312-981-7200. I always hoped that relationship would last, like we'd get married, because that's the best meet story of all time.
That's a meet cute to
That's the best. It's the best. Well, how'd you meet? We met at an Elvis Presley impersonators convention. And it was always a great story. We dated for a year, and it was always a great story because people would inevitably go, how'd you meet? And we'd go, well, let's bust out the Elvis impersonator convention story again. Got a lot of mileage out of that. I still do. We broke up like in 92, and I still get mileage out of it. So anyway, and by the way, Leslie Presley, you know, we're friends on Facebook. We've seen each other a little bit here and there, just, you know, talking, keeping up. She's got kids, and I think she's still married. I'm not sure. But anyway, she's the one who turned me on to Steve Earle.
Oh, look at that.
She turned me on to Steve Earle. So I am eternally grateful to Leslie Presley for that. So, anyway. All right, we're talking about nostalgia, and there's nothing more nostalgic than Elvis. And by the way, when Honeymoon in Vegas came out the next year, because it came out in the summer of 92, when that movie came out, people were like, that's ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I'm like, no, it's real. I said, I don't know about the Elvis skydivers. I don't know if that's a real thing, but that convention is real. I've been there. I've witnessed it firsthand. So, anyway. All right, let's break. We're talking about nostalgia concerts that you went to maybe when you were younger that you love. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And get your tickets for the New Kids on the Block now. They're going to sell out in 30 seconds. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday continues. You hear me? Triple Play Thursday! That's one artist, three songs. Harold requesting Don Henson, and that's Werewolf Watusi. Welcome back. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking about all concerts that we saw back in the day that we love, getting nostalgic about that. And then who we'd like to see on the nostalgia tours that are happening right now. They just announced that New Kids on the Block will be touring with Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, Salt-N-Pepa, Naughty by Nature on the mixtape tour. And we wanted to find out who would you like to see on the Nostalgia Tour, or who have you seen way in the in the past that you had a good time with? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Doc on WGN. Hi, Doc.
Hey, good morning. I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm 65, so you know what they say, nostalgia isn't what it used to be. But you reminded me of a story. There was an old comedian named George Miller, and he said he only got stoned once before his gig because he introduced Seals and Crofts as arts and crafts.
Good. George Miller, you know what, I'll tell you, Doc, George Miller,
yes.
George Miller was a regular on the old Letterman show. Letterman loved that guy. He was on all the time.
He was great.
He was funny as hell, yeah.
Hey, quick bootleg t-shirt story. I'm from Kansas City. Our biggest rock station has a one-day, 12-hour, 50,000 people concert every year. And they get the police, and they go out, and they lean on everybody that's selling bootleg T-shirts, confiscate them. They go down, and they get them out at the City Union Mission. Year-round, you see homeless people wearing Rockfest T-shirts.
Well, that's cool.
But I called the first show I ever saw, The Grateful Dead and Iron Butterfly.
Oh, my God.
Probably 1969 or 70.
Wow. Wow.
And I've seen Carlin twice. I would put him up there with any concert I've ever seen, George Carlin.
Yeah, I've never got to see Carlin. I never got to see him. One of my heroes, though. But, yeah, that's very, very cool. Iron Maiden and Grateful Dead. That's a
Iron Butterfly.
Sorry, yeah, Iron Butterfly and Grateful Dead. That's a hell of a first concert, I'll tell you.
I wish I remembered it.
Yeah. All right, Doc. Take care, buddy.
All right.
See you later.
Good morning.
All right. And here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was raised in the, what they called Millgate area, and we didn't have a lot of money for stuff. And the priest gave my girlfriend and I free tickets to the Danny Thomas show every year he had for St. Jude, and he had Paul Anka. And it was just, I mean, it was our first, and it was just something that we couldn't get over. It was the greatest thing. And we walked down Madison Avenue, because it was at the old, where they had all the basketball games.
Yeah, this is
stuff.
The stadium. That's the stadium, Chicago Stadium.
We, to save a quarter, because bus fare was a quarter, and you got a free transfer, so we could buy a hot dog.
Well, there you go.
We walked from there to State Street, got on the L, came home, and, well, it was the L and two buses.
Yeah, that's a long way. That's a long way to get downtown, yeah.
And another thing, I saw the premiere. He priest gave us tickets again to West Side Story, and I got to meet Russ Tamblyn.
Wow.
We sat two rows behind him, and it was really, for us, that was a big deal.
That is a big deal. That is a big deal. And, boy, that was a generous priest, I'll tell you, giving you all that cool stuff. Yeah.
Well, we helped around in the church a lot, and we found out we could get free gifts sometimes.
Yeah.
So we were there whenever they needed us.
There you go.
But then you talked about Elvis, and about 5 years ago, my girlfriend invited us to go to Equation Church. It's up around 31st Street, and they have every Lent a fish dinner. We went, and this year they had an Elvis impersonator. He was kind of short. We cracked up laughing, and he was a little chunky. But he sang all of Elvis's songs in Croatian.
Wow. In Croatian? Wow. Wow. Could you imagine if you were smoking pot at that point? Doc would have been freaking out. Linda, thanks for the stories. They were great. Danny Thomas, Paul Anka. All right. We got to take a break here for the news, and then we'll come back with more on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Harold, final Triple Play of Don Henson and that little old Grave Robber Me. And we're back, and we're talking about nostalgia tours and maybe shows that you saw way back when that you're nostalgic about. This all started because New Kids on the Block are celebrating the 30th anniversary of Hangin' Tough, and they're on the mixtape tour with a bunch of other 80s icons. And so we're talking about who you'd like to see on the nostalgia tour or who you saw back in the day. 312-981-7200. Erlene posted something on my Facebook page, Dan. Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, the Eagles are touring. That's what that's how Steve Dahl used to always say that whenever we play an Eagles song, he goes Eagles, and then he would that's how so I picked that up from Steve Dahl. I picked up a lot of stuff from Steve Dahl. Anyway, so they're touring and they're playing the United Center, and I think it's this week or I think it might even be this weekend that they're playing the United Center, and I have the ages of the Eagles. Erlene posted this on my Facebook page, not our Facebook page, not the show's Facebook page, but my own Facebook page. She posted this. So this is the age of the members of Eagles, and the Eagles who not necessarily all these guys were all original Eagles members, because you know obviously they had to have a couple of replacements and one being for the late Glenn Frey, who passed away. But here are the ages of the Eagles, and these guys are touring now, celebrating the 40th anniversary of Hotel California. And here are the ages. Joe Walsh, Dan, how old do you think Joe Walsh is?
Oh man, 76.
No, he's 70. He looks 76.
He does look 76.
Born November 20th. That's not your birthday, right?
The day before.
It's the day before your birthday. Yours is the 21st. November 20th, 1947. Okay.
By the way, 630 lets us know Eagles concert is this Monday.
Oh, it's this Monday. Okay. Well, there it is at the United Center. Don Henley. Care to take a crack at that one?
I will go 72.
He's 71. He's older than Joe Walsh, but by 5 months.
Mm.
He was born July of 1947. Okay. Vince Gill. Now, Vince Gill, you know, everybody knows who Vince Gill is. He's just touring with them to kind of fill in where Glenn Frey would have been. So Vince Gill, obviously not an original member of the Eagles. How old do you think he is?
I would go 63.
He's 61. Don Felder, original member of the Eagles.
74.
71. Randy Meisner, original member of the Eagles.
71.
72. Timothy B. Schmidt, who likes to sleep on your wife's couch.
Yep.
Well, that now we should clear.
That's fine.
Okay.
No, we can leave that there.
Leave it there.
I would say I'm going to go 60 because he's got such an angelic face.
He's 70.
Wow, good for him.
And Bernie Leadon.
71.
Exactly. Yes, 71. So Vince Gill, who's not a member of the band, is the youngest one at 61. And these guys are touring around the country. These guys are in their 70s, and they're touring around the country, and they are selling out stadiums like the United Center. As I've said before, I'm not an Eagles fan, but man, that's pretty damn impressive. These guys in their 70s touring the country and playing stadiums. And the youngest member of the band is not even in the band, and that's Vince Gill. The youngest guy on stage for these shows is 61 years old. That's pretty cool. I gotta admit, that's pretty cool. Okay, let's get back to the phones. We're talking about nostalgia tours. Who would you like to see and who have you seen in the past that you loved? 312-981-7200. And here is Matt in DeKalb on WGN. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Morning.
Back when I was a sophomore in high school, I went to Quigley South on the south side, and it was a 72-73. We had to take a theater's arts class, and one of the requirements for the class was the teacher had, so we had to go to two concerts. We had to go to a classical or a opera, and then we had to go to a rock concert or a blues or jazz kind of thing. So anyways, she'd give us this, tell us some different things were coming around, and so me and a couple buddies, we heard about this group that was playing at this gym over in Hammond, Indiana. And so we, one of the guys had a car, we go over there and go to the concert and, you know, enjoyed it. Didn't think too much of it. It was a filled up gym. It was a good time. All of a sudden, about 4 years later, I'm a sophomore, junior in a college, and I hear this name, and I go, and I hear all these songs, and I read, and I go, whoa, hey, guys, I went to there. I saw those guys playing at the gym, and it was Styx.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was pretty cool. And so it just really brought back to me that time in my life when, you know, something happens, and you didn't expect it,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, I thought that was pretty cool.
It's amazing. You know, the people who grew up at a specific time on the South Side and even in Indiana, as you mentioned. Styx played homecomings. They played proms. You know, they really did. They played a lot of high school gymnasiums in those days. And so a lot of people who are around your age, Matt, remember them playing their high school or playing a homecoming or playing a prom. They did that circuit for many years.
Did they
years.
Really? Yes, oh, yeah. I wasn't aware of that. I just thought it was just, you know, I just it stuck in my head. I said, I enjoyed this group. They sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
Didn't hear much of them. And all of a sudden, I'd say, I don't know, maybe they became big like around 75, 76, when I was a sophomore in college. And I just said, hey, man, I saw those guys. They were just, I don't know when they started out. They probably started out just around that time, I would think.
Yeah.
But
They started out.
I just wanted to mention, too, also, I really enjoy your format, you know, that it seems like you've had more in the last, I don't know how many, last year or two, where you do this kind of stuff. Where you bring up these topics and you know, have the callers come in. It just reminds me, back when you were with your partner in the good old days, I can't remember what his name is on Friday nights.
Gary Lee Wright.
There you go, Gary Lee Wright.
Yeah.
I go back to you back then. Oh, that's man. When I started listening to you, and I just really like this format more than I do when you'd have all the guests on and stuff. Anyways, I'll throw my two cents out.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right, Matt, take care. Boy, thanks for listening for such a long time and listening back when I was in the Gary Lee Wright days. Somebody's been listening for a while. All right. Let's see. Here is Chuck. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, how you doing? Chuck from Delvin. I seen the Eagles before, and I also seen Don Henley. And when Don Henley tours with his group, there's probably 30 musicians.
Yeah.
It's actually a better show, and it's like at one-tenth the cost.
Yeah.
My best band ever I saw was at the Holiday Star Theater, and it was Kentucky Headhunters when they sung Let's All Go Down to Dumas Walkers. And best drum solo ever, the drummer played it with no sticks. Best drummer I've ever seen in my life.
Mm.
And the only problem about going to them concerts like that, I'm 65, and when you go there and you start looking around, everybody's real old, and they're all, like, doing Geritol. And, you know, I think, honestly, everybody will keep going to them concerts. Even, like, with Mick Jagger, they'll be pushing him around in a wheelchair with a gruel cup.
And
there's just people that are just fanatics about it. And, so thank you very much.
Okay.
I enjoy your show.
All right, Chuck. Thanks very much. Take care. Yeah. drum solos, man. Man, those days, man. It was like, all right, man. You know, I went to a show last night, man. Bonham did a 25-minute drum solo, man. It was unbelievable. You know, do bands still do drum solos? I mean, you know. Because my favorite drummer right now on earth is Carter Beauford from Dave, and he doesn't even do he'll do like a bit of a fill here, but he doesn't do like back in the day in the 70s. Oh man, Carl Palmer did a 47-minute drum solo, man. I blew through five joints during his drum solo. That was back in the day, man. Like, guys would do 15-minute bass solos and stuff. The rest of the band would, like, go off stage. And remember when Motley Crue toured and Tommy Lee would do, like, a 15-minute drum solo, and his kit would rise up and then spin and stuff and go out over the audience, and he'd be flipping upside down. He'd be doing a 20-minute drum solo. At least that, you know, like... But see, back in the 70s, because I saw Zeppelin twice, and Bonham was known to do like at least 15-minute drum solos, so that the guys could go in the back and get wasted. You know what I mean? So like Page and Plant, not John Paul Jones, because in 1977 he was the only sober one on the stage. When I saw Zeppelin in 1977 at the stadium, you could just, if you looked at John Paul Jones, he's like, man, you idiots. Because the other three were wasted. The other three were completely annihilated. Because it normally would, at the beginning of each Zeppelin show, Dan, Plant would walk out and Page would walk out, and they'd each have a bottle of Jack, and they would break the seal on the bottle of Jack and then drink it during the show, and usually have it three-quarters of the way finished by the end of the show. When they walked out that night in 77, Plant's bottle of Jack was already three-quarters gone. And I was like, oh, man. And John Paul Jones just looking at him like, you morons. But see, the thing about, at least if you go see the Crew, like in the heyday, and Tommy, you know, Tommy Lee's going to do his ridiculous drum solo, at least there's, you know, like a spectacle. You know what I mean? Like the riser comes out, it goes above the audience, it spins around, he's upside down, lasers are shooting all over the place. At least it's fun to watch. Bonham would just be like, ba-doom, boom, ba-doom, boom, boom. And then he would like the last caller just said that, you know, the Kentucky Headhunters guy did his drum solo and he did it with no sticks. Bonham would always like do a big section of his drum solo with no sticks. He would just beat on the drums with his hands. But back in the 70s, everybody was so high, they were like, man, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, man. It'd be 15-minute bass solos. Who the hell wants to hear a bass solo for 15 minutes? What are we talking about here? Man, oh man. Chris Squire did a 47-minute bass solo. Unbelievable. And that was cool back then. Then you'd go out and get your $5 t-shirt in the parking lot, go home smelling like pot, and then you only wore the t-shirt once. That's what you did back in those days. Sit through a 27-minute drum solo. So stupid. All right. We'll break here. We've got some weather to give you, and then we'll come back. We got more texts. And if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're being nostalgic about concerts and talking about who maybe we'd like to see now on a nostalgia tour. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A recent nominee for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which we talked about yesterday, 773 area code requesting some John Prine in spite of ourselves. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell. And also coming up, Steve Cochran at 6 with the morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. We got some people who are calling in. We got some texts as well. We've been talking about who would you like to see come back on the nostalgia circuit. New Kids on the Block is touring. And maybe just talk about some of the concerts that you saw years ago that are classics. 312-981-7200. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
How you doing, Nick?
All right.
Good show. I like talking about these old things. I'm 67, so a couple of concerts that I mentioned to Dan. One was the Aqualung with Jethro Tull in the days when you could get a seat at the last minute and be front row center.
Yeah.
You know, like fifth row or something for whatever, $20. It was cheap then. And then at the Kinetic Playground, it was on Clark Street. Do you remember that place?
I do, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I was only there once for the Youngbloods. I was it was when I was driving on Ashland, and the guy was hitchhiking, picked him up. He was a roadie or something, or maybe he was in the band. I don't remember. But one that I remember that was at the stadium was I've probably seen 30 or 40 concerts, different people from the Four Tops to the Beach Boys to, you know, Temptations and everybody. But 10 Years After, who played at Woodstock.
Yeah, yeah.
And the drummer put on about a 15-minute solo where he started on the drums, went down the side of the drums, played on the floor, across the stage, up the mic stands, and I, you know, that's not what I expected, but yeah. It was, that's the only thing I remember of the concert, really, because I wasn't close, but
yeah.
it was unbelievable,
yeah.
Unbelievable that the sounds that can come from a guy, and he just worked and worked. It had to be about a 15-minute solo.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, those were the days, man.
Zeppelin, I saw a Zeppelin concert, but I was far away, and it kind of sucked. I think they were all drunk.
Yeah, no, I saw them in 75, and they were great. And in 77, they were terrible. They were completely loaded, and normally Zeppelin would play for like almost 3 hours. They played like an hour and a half that night. It was awful.
I think that's when I saw them because they didn't sound very good.
Yeah, yeah, they were terrible that day.
But no, it's a good show. I listened to it quite often and have called in a few times.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Right,
and have a good one.
You too, man. There you go. 15-minute drum solo, Dan. Starts at the drum kit, goes across the stage, goes back.
Nice.
Here's Mickey on WGN. Hey, Mickey.
Hey, how you doing, Nick? Good to hear you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, we're going a long time ago. We went up to see David Bowie, a bunch of us from Chicago, and of course we didn't have tickets. We never did, and but we always got in. People would give us tickets, and so but they were all dispersed, you know, throughout state. So we noticed there was like a section, nice area close to the stage. There were 9, 10, 12 seats in a row. We went and sat down in them, and then after a while, we heard the announcer say, "Will the group Wings please come to this section?" And you know, in such and such seats. Well, we were sitting in Wings seats, you know, mm-hmm. and so right away I'm like a foot from Paul McCartney, and his bodyguard says, "Don't even think about it." So we all dispersed, and then I was standing in the aisle. This beautiful girl came out of nowhere, and we started dancing. And Paul was in the aisle for some reason, and he turned around and he watched us dance for like 5 minutes. And I, it was a beautiful memory of. Yeah. We entertained Paul.
That's a great story. That's a great story.
Yeah,
that's cool. All right, Mickey, thanks, man. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right. There you go. Entertaining Paul McCartney. Paxton sends a text that said, "In 1970, I saw the Association with the Who as the opener. The Association was 3 hours late, and the Who couldn't fill the time because they had broken all their instruments after their set was over." That is hilarious. 301 area code says, "Back in the 70s, I was fortunate enough to see the Carpenters in concert." Oh, that's cool. 815 area code, "I saw Rex Smith at Old Chicago." Man, that is 70s. That is so 70s. All right, I got a few more texts here. We'll wrap this up, but we got a break for the news here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 773 area code. Requesting John Prine. That's Sam Stone. And welcome back. How's everybody doing? We are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and I will join Steve Cochran and the whole gang at 6:20 this morning, as I do every Thursday morning. We'll preview some of the movies coming out this weekend and talk about some other pop culture entertainment stuff. So it's always fun to hang out with Steve and the gang on Thursday mornings. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and tech. We're wrapping up the concert memories and nostalgia shows that you would like to see now. And if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. I got a few more texts, and let's go to the phones. Here's Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nick. Hey listen, I was at Old Chicago's grand opening, and Mountain played there.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Mountain played at the opening of Old Chicago?
Leslie West, yep.
Oh, my God.
At Old Chicago. We got free tickets to get in there because a buddy of mine was a car. He helped build, do the little storefronts and that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but another concert I seen Fog at, and Heart was the backup at the Omni 41 in Indiana.
Oh, in Indiana.
This is in the middle 70s.
Yeah. Wow. I'm still blown away. I'm still blown away that Mountain played the opening of Old Chicago. Leslie West, was Felix Pappalardi there too? Was it the full?
I was so drunk, I don't remember half of it, but it was Leslie West, because all 300 pounds of sweat was up on that stage with the guitar.
No, you can't, even if you're drunk, you can't miss Leslie West. Because he was the fattest guitarist of all time. There's no question. But that is fantastic. I was so drunk, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was a good time, though.
Okay, Dan, thanks, buddy.
As far as he knows, it was a good time.
As far as he knows, it was okay.
That's great.
So was Felix, because, Felix Pappalardi was one of the original founding members of Mountain. And, Leslie West had played a lot of shows without him. And I didn't know. I just was like, was Felix Pappalardi there? Because that would have been, and he's like, I don't know. I don't remember. I was drunk. Oh, man. Old Chicago. We've talked about Old Chicago before. Vic, are you familiar with Old Chicago? Have you ever heard of Old Chicago?
I'm kind of confused on what you're referring to.
Old Chicago. Listen to this. This is true because you're not from here. You didn't exactly. grow. You didn't grow up here.
However, the other day I was realizing I've been here 20 years now.
Is it
give or
right?
take a few years where I went overseas again?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Wow. That's a long time. That's home. Right. That's home.
I first moved. Not according to some people from Chicago I've talked to.
Oh, that's not long enough. You can't. You're not a Chicagoan if you haven't lived here. If you're not, well, a lot of people get nitpicky about that. If you're not, if you weren't born and raised here, then you're really not a Chicagoan.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Well,
I love the city though. It's a great place.
The place that we're talking about is this place called Old Chicago, and only in the 70s would they open up a place like this. It was an indoor amusement park. It was in Bolingbrook. It was located on a tract of land in Bolingbrook. And the idea was that you could go to this amusement park all year round. So, like, you can't go to Six Flags, you know, in January, but you could go to Old Chicago. And the idea was that there was a mall around, in the middle of the building, there was a big dome on top. And in the middle of the building was this amusement park with the first upside-down roller coaster, the first loop-de-loop roller coaster. And, you know, it had all the regular, like, big carnival rides and all that stuff. They had a haunted house inside. And it was basically a pretty big, loaded with rides, amusement park. And surrounding it would be storefronts. So it would be like a mall surrounding an amusement park. That was the basic idea.
Okay.
So you would go in, but there were no anchor stores. So there weren't, like, any Sears. There wasn't, like, a Lord & Taylor. There were no anchor stores at all. There were just all these ridiculous, terrible storefronts that were either doing the iron-on decal t-shirts that were all the rage in the 70s, or they were selling caramel popcorn or candy, but there weren't like any, and there were a couple of head shops in there, but so the mall was failing miserably. Like the stores, nobody was going to the stores, and people were going to the amusement park, and it was around for a while. It was a very 70s thing, so they did have concerts there every once in a while. They'd set up a stage and have a concert inside there. And if you look up Old Chicago online, there are a lot of, you know, Dan, they've got websites that are dedicated to Old Chicago.
Yeah, dedicated to that.
And Vic, if you get a chance at some point, you should tool around on the internet and look up some of the pictures and some of the stuff from Old Chicago.
Yeah, I'm looking now.
It's ridiculous, and it's so 70s. It is so, so 70s. And we used to go there all the time. We went to Old Chicago a lot when I was a kid because I loved amusement parks and everything, and it had a haunted house, and but it was a dump. I mean, it was just a dump. And it was in Bolingbrook, and that building stood. I want to say they closed in the 80s. It was
1980.
They closed. Okay, because you can't legally have Old Chicago open in the 80s because it's such a 70s thing. But we used to go there a lot, and but man, I have so many memories attached to Old Chicago. And there's also, Vic, if you ever see the movie The Fury, and it's with Andrew Stevens and Amy Irving, and it was and Kirk Douglas is in it, and it was Brian De Palma directed it, who did Carrie and who did Scarface and all those movies, and it was shot here in Chicago. And there's a major scene that takes place in Old Chicago, so it's like it is forever attached in the movies now.
I'll have to check that. Yeah. I'm sure that scene's on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 It is really hilarious. The scene is really, really ridiculous. So, but yeah, Old Chicago, man. I can imagine seeing Mountain at Old Chicago. For those people who don't know who Mountain is, you guys know the song Mississippi Queen. That's Mountain. Mississippi Queen. That's Mountain. So, but they have a lot of other great songs, too. They were a kick-ass band. I can't believe they played Old Chicago. I don't know why I find that so entertaining. I'm trying to picture Mountain playing Old Chicago. Where the hell did they put him? In front of the roller coaster? I don't know. By the haunted house? I don't know. Oh, that's so funny. Dan, have you ever seen the scene from The Fury?
Not, no.
So, you know, the plot of The Fury is that there are two people who are psychically connected, and they both have telekinetic powers. For some reason, Brian De Palma made two movies in a row about people who had about young people who had telekinetic powers and could make people move or, you know, do kinds of crazy stuff. And this was his follow up to Carrie. This is the movie he made after Carrie. You know what? I think he did Phantom of the Paradise after Carrie. No, that was before Carrie. All right. So anyway, yeah, those were his two movies. He did his telekinetic thing. So it's about these two people, young people who have telekinetic powers, and Andrew Stevens is one of them. And Andrew Stevens, at the beginning of the movie, sees his father, played by Kirk Douglas, get murdered by Arabs on a beach, you know, in the Middle East. So these guys come out, they're dressed as Arabs, and they murder Kirk Douglas, but he gets away. But at this point, a young Andrew Stevens thinks he just witnessed his dad being killed by Arabs. So he's got this psychic ability. He could do massive damage to people. He's got major psychic things. He could make people, you know, do crazy things. He could move objects. He could think, you know. So he's at Old Chicago. They end up going to Old Chicago, and he's walking through Old Chicago, and he sees some Arabs on the parachute ride, which is just the ride that kind of spins around and you're in like a metal parachute with lights surrounding it. You know what I'm talking about? It like looks like a parachute, but it's a ride that just goes in a big circle. Well, he sees a couple of guys dressed as Arabs on the ride, and Andrew Stevens has a vein that starts popping out of his forehead whenever he gets upset and starts to use his telekinesis. He's got a vein that starts throbbing. So he's walking through Old Chicago, and as he's walking past, you know, like rides and stuff, lights are exploding, like light bulbs are exploding because his psychic energy is so, at this point, he's so angry, he's making light bulbs explode and sparks fly out all over the place. So what he does is he walks over to the parachute ride, and slowly the bolts and the screws that are holding the parachute to the ride start to unscrew as like lights are exploding all over the place. And so the bolts and everything, they fly off. And so the two Arab guys are in the metal parachute thing, and it goes flying off the ride across Old Chicago through the air and smashes into the haunted house and kills the Arab guys. That's the scene. And it's as ridiculous as it sounds. It was so stupid. I love that movie, though. It's a great movie. At the end of that movie, Dan, it's got one of the greatest endings of all time. Amy Irving plays the other psychic person in the movie. And John Cassavetes plays the bad guy. John Cassavetes, the actor who, of course, you know, is a famous filmmaker in and of his own right, was a fantastic, you know, independent filmmaker. One of the first really successful, truly independent filmmakers. He was married to Jenna Rollins, made a lot of great movies, and he was in a lot of movies, too. He acted so he could actually direct his own movies. That's where he put all his money. So that's why he's in The Fury, and he hated the movie. I remember they had interviews with John Cassavetes about The Fury. He's like, nah, that was a piece of crap. I can't believe I was in it. You know, that kind of thing. But at the very end of the movie, he plays the bad guy, and at the end of the movie, he has, like, kidnapped Amy Irving, and everybody is dead except for her. Like, everybody has died in the movie except for her, and he's got her, and he's going to study her and do whatever. And he comes into the bedroom to try to talk to her, and she starts using her psychic ability, and he starts bleeding all over the place out of his nose, out of his eyes, and he starts shaking, and he explodes. That's how the movie ends. John Cassavetes explodes, and then the movie cuts to black. It's the best ending ever. John Cassavetes explodes. And De Palma has like 12 different angles. So he shows it like 50 times from the top, bottom, sides, boom, slow motion, fast. It's the last 2.5 minutes of the movie is John Cassavetes exploding. It's an extraordinary piece of cinema, I have to say. After Andrew Stevens kills some Arabs at Old Chicago, it's just a very special movie. And Kirk Douglas climbing around on the L, it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable movie. So there you go. If you want to remember Old Chicago, rent The Fury. All right, let's take a break for the weather here, and then we'll come back. I got a few more of these texts to get to here. If you want to join us and be all nostalgic and talk about nostalgia tours that you'd like to see today or ones that you saw in the past, 312-981-7200. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. It's going to get cold today, blustery, much cooler. Partly sunny, a high of only about 52 for tonight. The winds will diminish, but it'll be colder, low around 36. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high of 47. For Saturday, partly cloudy, a high of 56. And for Sunday, more clouds and a high around 50. It's currently 49 degrees at O'Hare. It's 49 at Midway and 50 at the lakefront. Dan, when we got in here tonight, it was 73 degrees outside.
That's crazy.
All I brought was my hoodie. All right, we'll take a break here. We got more coming up here on 720. WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago. And that's John Prine on Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah!
And that's hello in there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about who would you like to see on the nostalgia circuit? Like, who would you like to see reunited? Because New Kids on the Block are doing a tour. along with a bunch of other 80s icons, called the Mixtape Tour. And we wanted to find out from you guys who would you like to see, or maybe you saw somebody in nostalgia on the nostalgia circuit, or maybe you saw them way back in those in the old days. And we're just reminiscing about this kind of stuff. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 312 area code says, I've seen Engelbert, Paul Anka, Michael Crawford, and Eddie Fisher at the original Airy Crown Theater. Hey, Dan, you know who I saw at the Airy Crown Theater?
Who's that?
Yes. Hey, oh, you know what I forgot? You know what I forgot to say in my review of A Star Is Born? One of the reasons why I loved it at one point, because there's a point in the movie where, you know, Lady Gaga meets with Bradley Cooper's character. They spend like a whole night talking and hanging out into the morning, and he drops her off at home. She lives with Andrew Dice Clay, who plays her father in it. And her driver is played by Greg Grunberg. You know, who's right. In all of the J.J. Abrams movies and everything, and was in Felicity and all that stuff. So he plays her driver, and Bradley Cooper, when she's going in the morning, she's going into the house, is like, I have a gig tonight. We're going to the airport now. You should come. And she's like, no, I got to work. I can't just leave. I have to work. And he's like, all right. So he does end up sending Greg Grunberg back to her house. And knock on the door and go, here, I'm here to pick you up. I'm taking you to the airport. He really wants you to come. She's like, no, I got to work. When she comes downstairs, because Dice answers the door, and he sees a limo out there and this guy, you know, and so Dice is like, you got to go. You have to go. Take advantage of this. This guy's rich. He's a star. So when she comes downstairs to tell Greg Grunberg, no, she doesn't want to go, she's wearing a vintage Yes t-shirt.
That's
and nice. I like when I saw that, I was like, man, that's outstanding. She's wearing a vintage Yes t-shirt in 2000. The movie's modern day, too. It's 2018. I thought that was fantastic. It was just like, and I don't know whose choice that was. I really would like to think that it was Lady Gaga's choice to say, hey, I want to wear a Yes shirt. And Cooper went, yeah, that's awesome. It's a lovely touch. Yeah. Oh, man. 630 in the 80s, I always bought those $5 outside t-shirts. That's a nice way to put it, the outside t-shirt. The $5 outside t-shirt. Says, I still have them. They're old and they're faded, but I love them. Love your show, Nikki D. Well, thank you. As my alter ego, he was the drummer in the Shy Fellas band on Craig Ferguson's show. How do you still have those t-shirts? I can't believe they didn't disintegrate. I bet, you know, you obviously don't wear them anymore, so you don't wash them. Just kind of have them someplace. You can keep them that way, but you can't. I mean, I had a ton of them. I remember the one that got the most, like, messed up after it was washed was a Blue Oyster Cult t-shirt I got at the Blue Oyster Cult concert. And you know what they were known for the most, Dan, Blue Oyster Cult?
Like,
oh, their laser show.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, it blew up some dude's eyes, right?
Blew the guy's eyes out. It was... hey, man, did you hear that a dude went to go see Blue Oyster Cult and he got his eyes blown out of his head because of the lasers, man? Because they had the most... I saw the show. I saw, like, the Notorious... And they did have to cut down on lasers. I think the kid's eyes didn't explode, but that was, like, the rumor was, like, hey, Bubble Yum has spider eggs, and this guy's eyes exploded out of his head. Because Eric Bloom had a ring on his finger that had a laser come out of it, so he could, like, shoot it around the stadium. And he would walk out on laser beams. They had, like... You would go see... Now, that was, like, a Blue Oyster Cult. Oh, if you want to talk about weed smoking... People would blow pounds of weed just so they could watch the laser show. Oh, man. Saw the laser show. My brain exploded, literally. But apparently, like, the story was that he had his ring laser, and he hit some dude in the eyes, and his eyes blew up. The dude's eyes exploded, and he's blind, but he doesn't care because his eyes were exploded by a laser from Blue Oyster Cult, man, and he's happy to be blind. Because he got to see the laser show. It's the coolest story of what happened to your eyes? How did you get blind? Man, I was at a Blue Oyster Cult show and a laser blew out my eye sockets. Oh, that's awesome. I wish that happened to me. Yeah, but anyway, I got a t-shirt after I saw Blue Oyster Cult a few times, but after I saw Blue Oyster Cult, I got a t-shirt on the street. And I remember there was a picture of a bunch of us went to, you know, family and friends and stuff. We all went to Great America And this was when it was Marriott's Great America before Six Flags took over. And so there's a picture of us, a bunch of us, like, you know, ready to go and go on the ride when we first got there. They took a picture of us. This is an old, obviously, picture from the 70s. And, you know, I'm there with a group of people, and I've got my Blue Oyster Cult t-shirt on, and it's completely morphed and stretched out. It looked ridiculous. And I'm like 11 years old or 12 years old, and I'm wearing this stupid Blue Oyster Cult $5 outside t-shirt. Oh, man, but I didn't care. I still had my eyes. I witnessed the Blue Oyster Cult laser show, and I walked out with my eyes. They did not explode. They did not blow out of my head. wait a second. It's like that scene in Scanners where the guy's eyes explode. All right. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Love the show.
Thank you.
Back in the 80s, I got to go see Molly Hatchet, Thin Lizzy, Eddie Money, Santana, and Journey at White Sox Park, a day in the park. It was awesome.
Yeah, they called those the World Series of Rock.
Oh, my God.
That's what they...
Funny thing is we were out in the parking. Back in them days, we were out in the parking lot, and you could party all night long.
Yes, sir.
And nobody would mess with you or anything.
Yeah.
And so we get in there, and we've been waiting all night, throwing the frisbee, getting drunk, and
yep.
all that stuff.
Yep.
And next thing you know, we get in the park, and everybody's running in to get up close to the stage. And I'm like to my buddies, hey, let's go up in the upper deck, first row, and just hang our feet over the side.
Right.
It was so awesome. And so Molly Hatchet comes out, and they kick it. I mean, they kick it.
Yeah.
They were awesome. We fell asleep through Thin Lizzy and Eddie Money.
Wait a minute. You slept through Thin Lizzy?
Thin Lizzy and Eddie Money.
See, I can see... I can see you sleeping during Eddie Money. That makes sense. But not Thin Lizzy, man. Come on.
Oh, my God. But we woke up to the guitar of Santana,
uh-huh.
I swear to God.
There you go.
Oh, my God, he came out, and he just hit that guitar, and, like, boom, you woke up. And it was like, wow.
Oh, man.
You know? And then Journey was just awesome, man. They were in their heyday.
Yeah.
They were in their heyday.
All right, Chris, thanks.
It was a great time.
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. It's a great story. Take care.
Later.
All right. We're so drunk we slept. How do you sleep through Thin Lizzy? That's one band that I regret never having seen. And you know what? And we didn't get tickets. I vividly remember when they came through town opening for Queen. It was Queen and Thin Lizzy. And I never saw Queen either. And that's one concert that in the 70s that I think we contemplated going to, but we didn't. Ugh. All right. Nobody's eyes blew out of their skulls at that show. So, all right. We'll take a break. We got news coming up next.
Yeah. Hey, Nick. People are now bobbing their heads and marching into the newsroom to that song, Getting Candy.
That's
now,
exactly right.
That's weird.
It's because the newsroom here in WGN is a candy store, essentially.
Buffet.
It's a buffet of candy. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, requesting some Sammy Davis with the Candyman. Yeah. 312-981-7200. It really is crazy, Vic, that the amount of sugar that's on that console that you're at.
I can't imagine what would happen if somebody ate all of it. They'd probably overdose. There's probably enough sugar here to kill a person, right?
Well, you know, all the double bubble is gone. That was my go-to.
You know, I can bring that back if you want me to. I'd set my apartment.
Oh, you brought the double bubble to your apartment?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Of course you didn't. But they have the Smarties. They have this. They have Smarties in there, Dan. But they're the Smarties necklaces.
Ah,
so you have to like bite off of the string, which I always thought was weird.
Expanding into our jewelry empire as well, apparently.
Exactly, and there are dots. You know, I never liked those either because I don't really want something that's stuck to a piece of paper. I never really understood the appeal of that. And there's wax lips. What are you going to do with wax lips and stuff? You don't eat the wax lips. Do people eat wax lips?
They take pictures and post them to Instagram. That's what those are for,
yeah. Just to show everybody in the newsroom takes their job very seriously while they're walking around with fangs and wax lips on. red vines in there, all kinds of other stuff. The double bubble's gone, but there's plenty of other candy in there for Sammy Davis to chow on if he wants to stop by. I still can't believe that guy slept through Thin Lizzy. I don't understand how that's even remotely possible. I swear to you. How the hell do you sleep through Thin Lizzy? How is that? Okay, the other guy doesn't even remember if Huck Lardy was with Mountain because he was so drunk. You got a guy who doesn't remember the Mountain concert guy who slept through Thin Lizzy. That's the 70s, man. I'm telling you. I never understood why people get, you know, and I was a big drinker.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to spend a lot of money on a concert, I'd like to remember it. You know what I mean? I never really understood why people got so wasted at concerts. If you're spending a lot of money, you know, I mean, I've been to Dave Matthews shows. As you know, I've been to many, many Dave Matthews shows. And I can tell you, I can attest to the fact that people were smashed before Dave even came out. I can't even tell you the number of people staggered. I went to go see him at Soldier Field, and Buddy Guy was the opening act. And before Buddy Guy came out, the opening act, it was still light out. There were like four guys staggering up the stairs with beers spilling them, like falling over. I'm like, dude, you guys got another 4 hours to be. I mean, what are we talking about here? It makes no sense to me. And you drop, I mean, come on. What is it, like $10.50 for a beer now if you go to a concert? Like 10 and a quarter or something?
Oh, I'm sure that's just the domestic, not the
I mean, yeah. Know. If you get a Goose Island, that's $12. I mean, what are we talking about here? When I went to go see Pearl Jam, I mean, it was $10 for like a domestic. When I went to go see Pearl Jam at Wrigley. And 10 and a quarter, it was 10 and a quarter so that you can give 75 cents to the guy. You know what I mean? To the vendor. So, and I'm watching people just buy them. I mean, how much money are people spending? And I don't even want to tell you what I spent on my ticket to see Pearl Jam, because it's absurd. So, I'm certainly not going to be drunk if I spend that kind of money. If I spend that kind of money on a ticket, I'm going to remember the show. He slept through Thin Lizzy. Then Lizzy's not a quiet band, Dan. I know you know that.
Yes.
Oh, man. We got some texts here. People who went to concerts or want to see some other concerts. 312-981-7200. 920 area code says, I would love to see ABBA. Well, they're aren't they getting back together?
The Holograms are debuting later in 2019.
That's right. Well, there you go. You get your chance to see the Holograms. The ABBA Holograms. And ABBA's as popular as ever, man. I mean, you know, you get these two Mamma Mia movies that are making millions and millions of dollars. That
I mean, they were. I think we talked about this before. They were offered $1 billion.
Yeah.
$1 billion to reunite. And so you have to think, like, if they're offering the billion, the promoter thinks that he's going to get that back and change, yeah. You know? So, I mean, what does that say?
Yeah. They were always a big band. ABBA was always a big band. For people, you know, who remember in the 70s, they had, I mean, you know this. Everybody knows this. Massive, massive hits in the 70s. They were everywhere.
No one said, no one asked for a Glass Tiger comeback tonight? What?
Wait a minute.
I'll tell you what, Vic. Those classes just paid for themselves right there. That line right there. Just enough right there.
Where the hell is the Glass Tiger?
Walk into Second City and be like, here's my tuition, man, right here.
Oh, my God. Glass Tiger.
That song he had.
They had one hit, Glass Tiger.
Don't forget me when I'm gone.
Don't forget me when I'm gone.
Come back, Glass Tiger.
Oh, Glass Tiger. Vic wants Glass Tiger to have a reunion concert. Can we get that going? Let's get that going for Vic. I don't think they're busy. I would imagine they're not. I don't think they're busy.
You never know. They might be playing at smoky bars around small little corner. That one hit opening for other local acts.
That's true. Are they Canadian? Because I don't know why I have this weird feeling that they're Canadian, too. That Glass Tiger is Canadian. Perhaps they opened for Saga in Puerto Rico.
You are correct. Canadian rock band from Newmarket, Ontario.
Why? Okay, now I'm worried about myself. Why the hell would I know that Glass Tiger is Canadian? Why?
Closet fan. You gotta own your love for Glass Tiger.
Why would I remember that Glass Tiger is from Canada? Why would that? Yes. I don't know what my PIN number is, but I remember that Glass Tiger is from Canada. What the hell is wrong with me? Glass Tiger. All right. Let's get Canadian Bob on a bill on that, Dan.
Your test, Canadian Bill.
Yes.
If you choose to accept it.
Sean in Indy says, speaking of 25 people on stage, I saw George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars at Lollapalooza in Phoenix. They played before the Beastie Boys, and it was killer. Yeah, I saw. Listen, that's another one. You go see George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars, there's going to be 95 people on stage. Earth, Wind, and Fire, 612 people on stage. All dressed the same with their fantastic 70s outfits. Peter in Decatur said, my first big concert was in the spring of 1969. I went to see CTA in the Horse Arena at the Illinois State Fairground in Springfield. Oh, my God. In the Horse Arena? The next was in the fall of 69. I saw the Rolling Stones at the U of I Assembly Hall. There were two opening acts, one of them being B.B. King. Wow, that's pretty cool. CTA, by the way, for the people who are not old enough to remember, Chicago, when they were first formed, they were called the Chicago Transit Authority, or CTA. That's what they would name, and then they just shortened their name to Chicago for people who are too young to remember. 815 area code. I used to work at Poplar Creek Music Theater. Oh, Poplar Creek. Oh, the memories of Poplar Creek. That's where I first saw Saga. Opening for Jethro Tull. And my love of Saga began. I want to say that was the summer of 1982. Saw Saga opening for Tull. Let's see. I used to work at Poplar Creek Music Theater, and the biggest contact high was when Bob Seger played to the audience, and it was nothing but bikers. Sometimes playing to nothing but bikers is not a good thing. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Gimme Shelter or not, but it's sometimes not a good thing. But not all bikers are crazy. But Megan says, my first concert as a kid was seeing the Spice Girls in St. Louis on one of their first and only world tours. I like bringing it up to women my age because most of us were fans and not too many of them got to see them. If they do another tour, I'd gladly pay for a ticket. Now, that's been talked about, too, right, Dan? Haven't the Spice Girls talked about doing a reunion
tour? Yeah, because they got together when the Olympics were in London, I believe. They reunited for the opening ceremonies, and
that's
there was
right.
rumors.
Yeah, that's right. Boy, that would be huge. You know that, Dan, that would be massive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Esmeralda, ticket one.
It would be women in their... The place would be packed with women in their 30s. That would be... And I would imagine, kids and stuff, but... predominantly women in their 30s. You know who's obsessed completely, who was completely obsessed with the Spice Girls to the point of insanity? Emma Stone. Emma Stone was there's this great moment that she was on Graham Norton's show, the British talk show host who's got a great show. And she was on, then this was a few years ago when it was she and Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx, and they were promoting the terrible Spider-Man sequel, and they were all on. And Graham Norton is one of the he has everybody out. All the guests are out at the same time on the couch at the same time. James Corden ripped that off of him, but anyway, so he's like, I understand that because they were talking about promotional tour. She's been on the promotional tour for the movie, and she's like, I understand that you cried because one of the Spice Girls left you a message. She's like, yeah. And I guess it was Mel B left her a message, and it was just on an iPad. Somebody showed it to her on an iPad, and she started crying. It wasn't even live. and then someone else, another Spice Girl, I think it was Mel C, called her when she was like on tour, and called like she was on a radio show and said something to her, and she freaked out and started crying then. And so Graham Norton goes, so let me get this straight. You've never met a Spice Girl in person. She's like, nope, never face-to-face. And he's like, are you sure you've never met a Spice? I just want to make sure that you've never met a Spice Girl. And so she starts freaking out. the audience starts to freak out in the room, and she like puts her hands over her mouth, and you know her you know how big her eyes are already, and boom, and she starts freaking out. And then Graham Norton goes, "Now, you know, it's very rare for two Spice Girls to be in the same place at the same time." And she's like, "Oh my God, don't do that." And she starts looking around the room, and Andrew Garfield's going crazy. He's losing it. And so she starts looking around the room, and she's shaking, like shaking, and looking around the room. And she's like, "Oh my God, no, I have to prepare myself. I don't have to prepare myself." And he goes, "So I just want you to know that they're not here." They started playing drum roll too. They started playing a drum roll, and she's freaking out. And then he goes, "They're not here." And then she almost collapsed. It was one of the. That footage is on YouTube. If you really want to see it, I'm not doing it justice. It is absolutely hilarious. And Jamie Foxx and Andrew Garfield's reaction is priceless. She had the drum roll going. She was totally freaking out. So she would be there first. She would be the first person in line. Emma Stone. Her favorite was Baby Spice. Was that Emma?
Yes, Emma was Baby Spice.
That's why she liked her so much. It was her favorite. So, anyway, I thought I'd share that hilarious story. But you should all go to YouTube and look up the video because it's really funny. Okay, and this is these are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in WGN Radio. And you've got some breaking news. What's going on
there? Yeah, Nick, there was a rocket launch earlier this morning from Kazakhstan carrying an American astronaut, also a Russian astronaut. They were supposed to head to the International Space Station this morning. There was some sort of a booster malfunction. It did not make it into orbit. There's a search and rescue operation underway now. We'll update you as soon as we have more information.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll keep an eye on that right now. Okay. Here we go. Okay, we're back, and we'll keep an eye on that breaking story. Vic is in the newsroom, and everybody in the newsroom will be monitoring what's going on in that situation. So there we go. Let's wrap it up with some. We got some text here to close out the show. My dad and Lori says my dad and mom were living in Hawaii where my dad was stationed in the Army. 56 to 59. Elvis performed Free for the Troops and their families in 58. My folks are now aged 84 and 79. They still talk about it as the greatest concert they ever went to. 708 area code says, I lived by the amphitheater, and so I saw a lot of bands, but my favorite memory was when a buddy of mine wanted to crash the Johnny Winters concert. Back in the early 70s, security was poor, so I'd scale the downspouts and get up on the roof, which was loaded with pot-smoking hippies waiting to do the same. We busted out laughing and got high. By the time it came to sneak in, we were all buzzed like a herd of cattle. We crashed through the windows at the very top. My God, that's pretty dangerous. 630 area code says, saw Jimi Hendrix in Miami Beach at a concert. He was the opening act for the Monkees. They only did 8 shows together. That's one of those notorious stories. Like, did you know that Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees? It didn't last very long, but he did indeed open for the Monkees. That's how big the Monkees were. I don't know who grouped them together. Whose idea was it? You know, let's have this guy Jimi Hendrix. Let's have him open for this pop, you know, this pop group. 312 area code says my 12-year-old can sleep through metal and punk shows. He slept through parts of Gary Howe a few times and my husband's band. He can be right by the speaker with earplugs, but he's lights out. So okay, I think these guys slept through Thin Lizzy for a different reason. That would be. I think why they did. Jim in Carbondale said, I saw the Amboy Dukes with Ted in 67 at the Westmont. It'd be Ted Nugent for people who are not aware that he was with the Amboy Dukes. 219 area code, I saw Little River Band who opened for Seals and Crofts at the Holiday Star Theater in Northwest Indiana. It was a great show. The Holiday Star Theater getting a lot of love the past few days, huh?
Yeah.
Got a bunch of mentions.
A lot of these concerts happening at the Brawl Room and the amphitheater.
The Brawl Room.
Doing these over the course of the last couple of hours, those are the three venues that definitely got mentioned the most.
Yeah. Well, the amphitheater, that place was crazy. They used to have, that's where they would have almost all the pro wrestling when wrestling would come through town. But this was back when it was regional wrestling, you know. It was almost 90% of the wrestling stuff was always at the amphitheater. 312 area code says Glass Tiger's song Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone had backing vocals by Bryan Adams. That's how everyone knew they were Canadian. That might be it. You know, being the Bryan Adams fan that I am and knowing that Bryan Adams is indeed from Canada, that might be what it is. That Bryan Adams, it was probably a selling point for those guys. Because Bryan Adams was huge in the 80s. Canadian Bill said, Glass Tiger tours around Canada every summer. I requested it. Oh. Okay. And it would be more Glass Tiger talk than you would ever expect to hear on your early morning radio here. And thank Vic Vaughn for that, for the resurgence in Glass Tiger conversations.
So that would be Vic Vaughn's reunited band.
He wants, yeah, well, that's what he said. He wanted Glass Tiger to return. So, but I guess all he does have to do is go to Canada during the summer, hang out with Canadian Bill. They can go see him together. Maybe they can crash through the windows on top of the building like they did at the amphitheater.
Now I'm imagining a road trip between Canadian Bill and Vic.
Oh, yeah.
Transversing Canada, various climates, ending with a little vacation in San Juan to see Saga.
To see Saga. That's how it's got to end, man.
Right.
You know, any popular, you know, praising of Canada has to end with seeing Saga. So, I still can't believe that Michael Sadler checked in last night at the grand opening of the Hard Rock Cafe in San Juan. That's just, I just laughed when I saw that, when I saw the thing. Michael Sadler, by the way, is lead singer of Saga, for people who don't know that. And I'm, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people don't know who the lead singer of Saga is. I'm sure they couldn't name the lead singer of Saga. There's only a few of us who can do that. So, all right. Well, thank you for all of the memories that you shared and the concerts that you went to and all that cool stuff. Yeah, we'll come back, tomorrow is Friday, so we'll have all of our, regular features. That would be Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and You Big Dummy. And, that's all coming up. Plus, we're going to talk, with, some filmmakers from the area who are releasing a movie, a romantic comedy. And we'll talk with the writer, the director, and, one of the stars of the movie. It's a local film and it's getting some distribution. So, and they've got a big premiere coming up, and, we'll talk to them about that. And that's all going to be on tomorrow morning's, show starting at 1 a.m. and we'll go 1 to 5. Coming up after this, we'll take a break. We got the news and we'll get, more of what's going on that, in that breaking news, regarding, the launch of that rocket, and, what's going on with it right now. So let's break. News is next.